Joe Rogan Podcast. Check it out.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan Podcast by night, all day.
Boom. All right, here we are. We're in a plane right now. Flying, where, what ocean? Pacific. Flying above the Pacific. I'm with Dana White.
What's up?
Tony Hitchcock.
Hello, everybody.
And we're in shock. Right now, no one here should be allowed to vote. We shouldn't be allowed to drive. we should all be forced to settle in. Don't make any rash decisions. Like, right now, we're dealing with, this is a crazy time. We just got done watching... I mean, it might not be the biggest upset in combat sports history. I know I said it after the fight. I think Buster Douglas might have been a bigger upset because Buster Douglas was kind of a fuck up. He was kind of a guy who didn't really train hard, didn't take care of himself, and he was a 42-1 underdog when he knocked out Mike Tyson. Holly Holm was only a 12-1 underdog when she knocked out Ronda, and Holly was, you know, very respected in the combat sports world, multiple time boxing and world kickboxing champion. But still, on Twitter, when I was hyping this fight up and I was telling people about this fight, so many people were saying, you're trying to sell us bullshit, you know, Holly doesn't have a chance, Freddie Roach said Ronda Rousey's gonna destroy her, and it was all these articles were saying you're just gonna... So it was an upset. But it wasn't just that it was an upset. It was the way she did it. Yep. The way she did it, though. She fought the perfect fight. And when she head-kicked Ronda, just the icing, the cherry on the cake, good night, everybody, and hammer-fisted her when she was out. I mean, we're all shocked. I'm in shock.
The whole place was shocked. I mean, there's a reason right now why literally my phone at 4 o'clock in the morning was going crazy. Every media outlet on earth, I mean, you name it. My Dave Schaller, our PR guy, said, pick an outlet, say it, just say something, pull a name out. They called and they want either Holly or Ronda. They want to talk to him. And I was saying earlier to you guys, it's like Patriots are looking good this season. They just went 9-0. They could win another Super Bowl. The world will not go fucking crazy the way the world went when two badass human beings square off in a combat fight. The world goes fucking crazy, man.
It's we're not used to women doing that. And if we are used to, like, there was a brief moment in the past where Christy Martin got big. Remember the coal miner's daughter, and she used to box on TV, and she would have these kind of fights. But one of the things about watching women fight was they didn't really knock each other out. They'd sort of beat each other, and they would punch each other. But when Holly head-kicked Ronda last night, it was like, it wasn't just that she beat her. It was just that Ronda was such a superstar. When such a superstar gets beaten like that, the whole world has to go, what? It's like when Buster Douglas knocked out Mike Tyson. It wasn't that a guy got knocked out. Everybody knows guys can knock guys out. We've seen Mike Tyson knock out 100 guys. It's not that. It was that Mike Tyson got knocked out. What? What? Like, it didn't fit in our paradigm of how the world works. The world works. Ronda Rousey runs out, grabs girls, throws them on their head, arm bars them, or she knees them in the stomach, punches them in the face, takes them out. To see that happen the way it happened, to see Holly Holm fight the perfect fight and be so classy, all through the media, everything she did, cool as a cucumber, during the weigh-ins, Ronda screaming at her in her face and everything, Holly was stone-faced, never changed her expression. I mean, the whole thing was just...
It's almost the same feeling, not the same feeling, but almost the same feeling that I got on 9/11, watching those giant trade centers come down. No, I'm serious. When the trade centers got hit by planes, we were like, holy fuck. But when you watched them actually come down, you're like, there's no way something that solid and that stabilized and strong and powerful is coming down right now. And that's how I felt when the leg kick happened. Like, I felt like there was a delayed reaction from everybody. Like, people are like, oh yeah, she just got head kicked and she went down, but it's not over. It's not really over. And until the ref, until her dean waved that hand, I still think it took 10, 20, 30 seconds before people really realized what was happening there.
I was outlining it before the fight, and what was funny was all these people on Twitter were like, you know, you're trying to sell us this bullshit. We're already watching. Stop trying to sell us bullshit. You know Ronda's going to kill her. But as I'm outlining it, I'm outlining kicks. I'm talking about oblique kicks. I'm talking about movement and distance and Holly Holm's striking credentials. And I'm like, this is a complicated fight for Ronda.
Yep.
And it really sunk in with me when I saw her at the weigh-ins. You could tell that she realized, like, this, even though Holly wasn't doing anything disrespectful, she wanted to get this emotional. She wanted to turn this into something, like, very, very personal.
Yeah, and she, you know, I don't know what was going on, but Ronda was, you know, when you do that at the day of the weigh-ins, you're trying to get in her head, you're trying to rattle her, shake her up, and Holly was not rattled or shaken one bit
at all.
Whole exchange.
Was the other thing that we were talking about during the broadcast, we were saying, like, this is a girl she's faced intense pressure before, world championship pressure in boxing and kickboxing. She's been there, man.
Shitting all over this fight. I did a radio tour the week we left for Australia. I said, this girl's had 45 fights and had multiple world titles. There's a sense of experience and this just calm feeling, even though she's going in against Ronda Rousey. And Ronda is, you know, I guess now you could say she was really the female Tyson for the sport because of the way everybody's reacting to her loss. But, you know, this girl has a lot of experience, man. It's a big deal. And she has the distance, the range. She has great head kicks, you know, and good hands. This was a great fight. This was the fight to make.
Yeah. Well, you know what it was? Is that she didn't come into her own in the UFC until this fight. Like, even though she looked great in other organizations and she knocked people out, when she fought in the UFC, the few fights she had in the UFC, she was still trying to find her footing. Like in the Raquel Pennington fight, she looked good, but she didn't look like a world beater. It's like, we talk about this all the time, but being in the UFC is such an overwhelming experience for fighters that it takes them several fights. Like Kyle Noak. Like, Kyle Noak has had, what, 10 fights in the UFC? I don't even know how many fights he's had in the UFC. But last night came into his own. Last night, when Kyle Noak fought Sabata, he came into his own. He landed that. He looked fantastic, landed that front kick to body, and said to himself, when I was interviewing him, he's finally believing in himself. It takes a while to get comfortable in there.
The other thing, too, in this sport, it's so different.
Too cozy. This is, we're on a plane right now. What's your name, ma'am?
Giselle.
And Giselle is the flight attendant. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Would you two like to eat together?
Sure.
I won't judge
that
you.
Would be awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll pause this for a moment. We'll come back in a little bit. Yeah. Are you going to set up the tray right now? Is that what you're doing?
I'll come back.
Okay. Thanks.
Magic tray. Sorry.
All right. Thank you, Giselle.
Well, the other thing is, is that in this sport, and we say this all the time, there's so many different ways to win and lose, and it's so hard to be perfect all the time in a sport. To go undefeated and go on these long runs for 10 years like Jose Aldo, or as long as Anderson Silva did, or as long as Ronda Rousey did, it is hard to be perfect every time you go in there. Because I don't care how good of an athlete you are, how long you've been competing, not everybody jumps out of bed every day and feels perfect and feels good. The timing is on. Your body feels right. You know, it's not possible for that to happen all the time. It's why when people go on these undefeated runs in this sport, they are fucking great. They are truly great. And then you take all the things about physically not being perfect, then add the pressure and the workload that gets put on you when you become a UFC champion. Ronda Rousey did it better than anybody's ever done it. The amount of work and the time she put in, how hard she trained, the things that she would do. She didn't become a huge superstar the way that she did for no reason. She worked at it. And you see Conor work at it. And these guys that can go on these long runs are very unique individuals.
And the pressure that she's under, and the pressure and the distractions.
Yep.
When you see her in all those media events, I mean, we've all seen her on all these different talk shows and all these magazine articles. Is that your Is that your music?
Oh my god, it is. I'm sorry.
Look, listen to this song. He's got his Beats headphones blaring. But when you see all these things, you know, I tune into them and I see them, but I don't think of how many she's doing that I'm aware of them. You know, if someone's aware of, if you're aware of someone on The Tonight Show, if you're aware of someone in a Rolling Stone article, think about how many things they're doing that you're not aware. Think of how much shit Rhonda is doing all day long, constantly her phone's blowing up, media requests, constantly people asking her to do things.
And you know, as well, you know, most people don't realize, they look at somebody and go, oh, big deal, you got to do interviews, you got to do this. It sucks a lot of energy out of you, man. Doing that stuff is very time-consuming. You always have to be on. There's tons of preparation that goes into it. The travel that's needed to do it. It's a heavy workload when you become the champion.
Well, it's a heavy workload for a guy like you who doesn't have to fight. It's right. A heavy workload. Right. Constantly doing interviews. But for someone who has to fight and you have preparation, you have to train, you have to eat right, you have to sleep right, you have to make sure that you get all of your physical preparation in. I mean, it's a massive, massive distraction.
Carla Esparza. When Carla Esparza, won tough, she was the champion. We started putting her out. She had to do media. Then we needed her to defend her title, and she started to freak out early. Like, this is too much. I'm breaking out. I just got off the Ultimate Fighter. I trained for this fight. I won the show, and now I got to defend the title, and I got to go back. It's just people start, you know. Rhonda said this quote this last week. She said, these people who think they want to be the world champion have no idea what it really takes to be the world champion. And yeah. It's so true.
You know, I remember when BJ Penn beat Matt Hughes, and I was interviewing Matt in the Octagon, and Matt was very candid and very honest, and I really admire the way he approached it, because I never interviewed anybody before and they talked about it like that. He said, honestly, losing is a relief. He said it was just a tremendous amount of pressure being the champ and having all these people coming after me. And honestly, it was a relief. I'm like, wow, what a ballsy guy he is to admit that like that. What an honest guy.
It's so true. The amount of pressure that these guys are under and the workload. And then you take Rhonda and you add movies on top of it. She's doing movies on top of it, yeah. And books, and going on book tours, and all this stuff. It's a lot of work for anybody. And but like I said, she did it better than anybody's ever done it. She really did.
Now, when you look at the fight stylistically, that's one of the crazy things about fights. You know, you can get a guy like Floyd Mayweather that figures out how to box people and get to a 49-0 record, but to figure out how to beat every different style of martial artist, when you're talking about takedowns, leg kicks, all these different things, we had talked about the one thing that we hadn't seen Rhonda deal with was someone who knows how to kick. And we really had Kat Zingano was the only possibility, and Kat just made a crazy mistake and rushed Rhonda, got caught in a scramble and got armbarred. But what Holly Holm was able to do, it was the first time we ever saw anybody knows how to kick. Keep her on the outside, a lot of movement, a lot of kicking, and that's kind of missing in Rhonda's game. The kicking aspect, I don't recall ever seeing her throw a kick. I mean, if she has, maybe one or two ever. I mean, do you remember seeing her kick?
Yeah, I don't know. The thing is that Rhonda was a fucking tornado and ripping through everybody, like, in seconds.
Yeah.
So you probably don't get to see her full game or what she's got. And last night was just craziness. So you know, it's tough to sit back and look at game plan, because the other thing is, what are you going to do with Holly? Now you can look back and say, well, she probably should have tried to grapple with her. She should maybe try to double leg her, get in the clinch, take her down, do this, that, and everything else. But that's not Rhonda. Rhonda is, I'm going to go out and I'm going to fucking bang with you. I'm going to try to throw you. If I get the opportunity to throw you, I'll throw you. She never got any opportunities. She got into a couple exchanges. She rocked Holly a couple times, but she never really...
You think she rocked her?
Yeah, I think she did.
Really?
From what I remember seeing the fight, I remembered seeing Holly look like she got hurt a couple times in the fight by Rhonda.
I didn't see that. I remember seeing her charging after Holly and maybe connecting a couple times with punches, but Holly was always moving back. And you know, like when someone's moving away and you hit them, it doesn't have nearly as much impact.
There's no doubt. She was on the outside and she was picking her apart and hitting her with big shots.
And planting.
Yep.
Planting and then throwing that straight left.
Yep.
Moving, planting.
Hit her with a big elbow one time.
Mm-hmm.
Hitting her with hooks.
She hit her with a couple of those oblique kicks to the legs too.
Yep.
Which jar your knees, you know?
It reminded me of watching an actual bullfight of when the bull charges and the matador hits that sword a couple times. Like, that's what it reminded me of.
Well, that's what you were saying about the time when Rhonda missed.
Yeah, oh my God. When Rhonda missed that one time and she turns around and looks, it looked like a scene from a movie.
When she missed and stumbled.
Yeah.
She fell down. And Holly just ducked under and was out of the way.
And she turned around and she had a look on her face like, who am I going against right now? It's exactly what her face said. And she was wearing it. And I think that was a huge turning point. I also think, I went crazy when Holly Holm took her down because they were clenched up and it looked like Rhonda was trying to get that toss in. And all of a sudden, Holly lifted and sort of just did like a standing double leg sort of and got her down. It was, I think, psychologically a huge turning point.
They got into a clinch there at one point and they ended up going down on the ground and Rhonda was trying to get an armbar on her and then Holly pulled out of it. Yeah, I got to see the fight again. It was so fast and crazy.
We replayed the entire second round, but the second round, she was already beaten up. We had time, and I said to Bruce in the truck, I was like, let's do the whole fight again. Let's do the whole fight and comment on it, and you know, with the knowledge of what had happened, and because we're only dealing with, 7 minutes. Let's do this whole thing again. But we wound up playing the second round again, and Rhonda came out for that second round already flustered. Already, she was so tired going back to that first round. Like, her legs were wobbly, she was breathing heavy, and I like Edmund. I talk to Edmund all the time. I enjoy talking to him. I always hug that guy when I see him. I do not like what he did in the corner. He wasn't honest with her. He told her she did great. He was like, great round, champ. Everything's great. I mean, maybe he was trying to psychologically pump her up, but that's not what you need. I mean, she needed technical advice. She needed someone to tell her what she's doing wrong and how to correct it. And I think, he's more of like a boxing coach than he is an overall MMA coach.
Yeah, I mean, well, the thing is that if it isn't broke, don't fix it.
Right.
You know?
That's
so,
a very good point.
The thing is now is, what do they do? Listen, at the end of the day, Edmund's a guy who really cares about Rhonda and her career and, all of that stuff. So I think as a team, they'll sit down and try to figure out what went wrong and what needs to be fixed.
Yeah. And Tony, you had a great point. We were at breakfast today. You were like, all these people on Twitter, like, they knew what was going to happen. Oh, you knew. You're like, oh, well, I assume you bet everything you had then, right?
Right, yeah. Everybody wants to say that they knew what happened. Well, then, where's your betting slip?
Well, you want to know something? Vegas went down last night. A lot of people did bet on Holly Holm last night. And apparently there were some big college football games last night with huge spreads. And they parlayed Holly Holm and the college game. And this is what I heard. I don't know if this is fact, but this is what I heard today here in Australia, is that the Bellagio had to shut down for over an hour because they didn't have enough money in the cage to pay everybody from the Holly Holm bets.
Oh, my God.
How about that?
Well,
and there's some guy, his name's Vegas Dan or something like that. He bet $25,000 on her.
20. Yeah. He bet 20, won 240.
Yeah.
The
Bellagio.
12 to 1.
The Bellagio is going to have to shut off their fountain, save that water bill for a little bit, huh?
The other big bet that everybody was taking was the over. The over was a round and a half.
Yeah. It's an interesting situation because I love Rhonda as a person. I consider her a good friend. I really like her, and I know you do too.
Yep.
And as a person, I'm sad for her loss that this happened to her. But Holly Holm is a great person too.
Yep.
And they're two great competitors. And I think ultimately what happened yesterday, last night, is great for martial arts, you know, and it's great for MMA, because even though it was terrible for Ronda, and I feel terrible for her, I feel great for Holly Holm. It's very very conflicted.
Right. It's like crazy.
I'm trying to figure out when I'm interviewing Holly inside the Octagon. I'm going in there as a person who cares about Ronda. It's tricky. Because this is the biggest moment of Holly Holm's life, and I want to honor that.
Right.
And I want to go in there, and I am genuinely happy for her, while at the same time, genuinely sad for Ronda.
Right.
But I can't acknowledge that. I have to be happy for Holly. And not only do I want to, when I'm interviewing someone inside the Octagon, I am trying my best to get them to express themselves. I want Holly to say, I mean, this is the new bantamweight champion of the world, Holly Holm. And she's got tears in her eyes, and her dad's there, and her husband's there, and Winklejohn's there, and everybody's there, and it's this intense, intense moment, and I want to get that out of her. And while that was all happening, I was thinking to myself, what a good person she is.
Yeah.
Like, she's even though, you know, I love Ronda and I care about Ronda, like, what a good person Holly Holm is.
Yeah.
You know, she's just, like, you can't help feel happy for her.
It's true. It's the crazy thing about this business that we're in. It's not just Holly and Ronda. It's every person that goes in there and competes in the Octagon. Both have these fucking dreams of winning and glory and world titles and money and all the things that go along with it. And then every fucking weekend when we do a show, one guy or girl moves forward and one guy or girl moves backward. It's a crazy thing. And Holly Holm and her father, her husband, and all the crew that was around her could not have been better people, could not have handled the whole situation. I couldn't agree with you more. Such very, very good people. I went to the hospital last night, and I had Joanna Jędrzejczyk there, I had Valerie Letourneau there, and I had Ronda Rousey there. And I'm walking from room to room going, Jesus Christ, this is a crazy business we're in, man. You know, it's just so crazy. These girls, you know, even Joanna, as dominant as she was last night, she was hurt. She broke her hand, you know? She broke her hand. Valerie Letourneau was, oh my God. Her eye was massive. I'm serious. It was the craziest thing that I've ever seen, her eye last night.
And it was so swollen by the end of the fight. I can only imagine what it looked like in the hospital.
Joe, it was so bad. So then I'm like, how's your leg? She looks at me and she pulls the covers over and shows me her leg. I've never seen anything like that. I'm telling you, that poor little girl is banged up right now.
She took some hard, hard shots in her leg and really kept kicking with it, kept coming forward. She is so fucking tough.
So tough. The women are tougher than the men, man. Women have fucking babies, for Christ's sakes. They're way tougher than us. Way tougher than the men.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm so impressed, first of all, with Letourneau's ability to rise to the occasion, too, because that was the best fight she ever fought in her life, or at least is what I've seen in the Octagon. And against Joanna, who's a fucking killer. She's so good.
At the UFC, we always believed in Valerie. We thought Valerie was good. Big, strong, 115-pounder for that division. Now she's at least going to sit in the rankings where she belongs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She wasn't ranked number 8. She's better than that. And she proved it last night.
Yeah.
Joanna's just a fucking monster.
She's so tough. And Tony is in love with her, by the way.
Yeah, I'm in love with Johanna. If you're listening right now, Johanna, I love you.
And don't call her Johanna then. Call her Joanna.
Joanna.
Yeah, it's no H. There's no H.
Everybody pronounces it differently, including her. I've seen her in different interviews say her name total 6 different ways.
So, well, when, you know, people start calling her Joanna Champion.
Yeah.
They're calling her Champion now. They don't even want to fuck with Jędrzejczyk. It's like, try spelling it. There's 3 people on the planet that can spell her last name.
How about she broke her hand and was throwing punches right up until the bell, like she didn't have a broken hand?
Yeah.
She's awesome, man.
She's a beast. She's a beast. And she's arguably one of the most technical strikers in MMA today.
Without a doubt.
She's so good.
Without a doubt. And then going back to the Holly Ronda thing, I mean, Holly and Ronda are the two best in the world in the 135-pound division. Holly Holm fought the perfect fight last night, man. As you sit and just think about it and run it through your head, fought the perfect fight.
And there was so much going on, too. Ronda didn't want to touch gloves with her. All the animosity at the weigh-ins.
Apparently, Lady Gaga came out today and said that's what happens when you don't touch gloves.
Lady Gaga should know, because she's been fighting for years.
Yeah.
She's been...
crazy.
Fucking Donald Trump!
But you know what's crazy? That's how big this fight was. Mm-hmm. When you really try to wrap your head around how big this fight was. Donald Trump, who's running for president, tweeted a nasty tweet at Ronda.
Say the tweet. He said,
I'm glad Ronda Rousey lost last night. She's not a good person.
And tell
Donald Trump.
Explain
so Donald
what
Trump
happened
apparently
there.
Was pissed because he came out and said that Ronda was endorsing him for president, and then Ronda came out and said she was not.
Well, she said she was endorsing Bernie Sanders, didn't
yeah.
she? Which is ridiculous because she's rich, you know?
Ronda, I love you, but Bernie Sanders is a lunatic socialist, man. Yeah.
He's going to take your money, Ronda. Yeah. You've got too much money.
So,
go with Hillary.
Adam Hunter posted, Bernie Sanders will take 90% of her wins as soon as he's elected president.
He will, too. Yeah, he's got some ridiculous ideas about wealth. But I just can't imagine Lady Gaga and Donald Trump tweeting about an MMA fight.
That's how big this fight was. This fight broke every record we've ever had, from the venue to merchandise to commercial pay-per-view. Everything. I mean, everything. The numbers that are rolling in are astronomical. Holly Holm has... When we took off at 12:30 in the afternoon on Sunday. No, on Monday, right? It's Monday, and mm-hmm. yeah. We just took off at 12:30 in the afternoon on Monday in Australia, and Holly Holm was still trending worldwide, number one, and the NFL is going on right now. And there were crazy games, like Green Bay lost again. The Patriots barely beat the Giants with his last-second field goal with 6 seconds left, and Brady drove down the field with a minute left. Holly Holm is still number one trending worldwide.
Well, because it's so stunning, because you've seen football a million times. When the ball goes across the line, oh, yeah, everybody gets crazy. But to see someone like Ronda Rousey, a movie star, you know, transcending the world of mixed martial arts, get fucking head kicked like that and flatlined and blood and the hammer fist, like, whoa, just so stunning. And when I think about Lady Gaga and Donald Trump, the first thing that I was thinking when we were talking about this was, you and I have been friends for a long time, and one of the first UFCs that I came to when we became friends was right after September 11th in 2001, when Tito Ortiz fought Vladimir Matyushenko, and you guys went over the pay-per-view. So what happened was there was a cutoff, a three-hour cutoff, and when the cutoff hit, the fight was still going on. They had timed it wrong. So you guys had to give a fuckload of money. I wasn't even working for you back then.
Right.
I was just your friend.
Right.
And we were hanging out, we were drinking, and you and Lorenzo and Frank were like, whoa.
Yeah,
you lost millions.
Yeah.
Millions. You just like, everybody was like...
That was a bad one.
Everybody was like, oh, fuck. Palms
we went
to
over the
face.
Pay-per-view window. So the pay-per-view shut off with two rounds left to the fight.
Yeah.
And so people wanted their money back.
And there was not that many pay-per-view buys back then, man. It was so fringe. And... I felt a responsibility as a fan to try to support it, but there was no social media back then. There was nothing you could do to support it. I mean, there's nothing I could do. I talk about it in interviews. You know, I go to do the Howard Stern show. I talk about it. But
they would put him on these Fear Factor tours where he'd do these radio tours and he'd talk about UFC instead of Fear Factor.
I mean, nobody even knew what it was. I mean, it was like, it was so fringe back then. But to go from that to here we are in 2015, and a fucking guy who's running for president, Donald Trump, is tweeting about the results of the fight in a catty way.
Right.
Right. Like, I'm glad she's not a good person.
Not right. only is he running, he's basically the front runner right now. Right.
Well, I think Ben Carson is for the Republican Party, but...
That guy doesn't have a chance. He's a sleeper. That guy can't even keep his eyes open when he's talking. It's unbelievable. He doesn't have a chance.
Well, I don't know who has a chance. I think they're both... I think Jeb Bush is probably the more likely candidate. It's like, yeah. wait for the dust to settle. But just the fact that a guy running for president is addressing mixed martial arts, which, you know, you and I have both talked about that when we first got involved in it. It was like talking about being involved in porn.
True. It's crazy. And again, just last night was massive, man. Last night was massive. We can talk about it. And all the people that were tweeting about the fight before the fight.
Yeah.
You know, Ronda brings in this crowd of people that don't normally watch UFC.
Yeah, sure, definitely. Well, John Wayne Parr, who's a 10-time world Muay Thai champion, he's a good buddy of mine. He was at the fight yesterday, and he brought his daughter. His daughter's a huge Ronda Rousey fan, and his daughter was so conflicted after that fight was over because she's a kickboxer herself.
Right.
She loved kickboxing, so on one
she's
hand...
She's like 12 or something. Right?
Yeah, she's yeah. 12. Yeah. I think she's 12. She fights. She fights.
Yeah.
She fights. She's
I
good.
I met her last night.
She's a great kid.
I sort of felt bad because I was actually sitting right next to her, and she kept going, come on, Ronda, let's go, Ronda. And you know me, I wanted to see history get made. I like Ronda Rousey. I like villains. I like the bad guys. I like an ego. I wanted to see history get made. I was that close, and I also know that it's good for Ronda, and it's good for the UFC if Ronda finally has some competition. And so I was cheering every time Holly landed a punch, and when Holly landed that takedown, I launched out of my seat. I couldn't help myself. And I felt sort of bad because she kept, come on, Ronda. But me, I selfishly just wanted to watch history get made, and I couldn't believe it when it happened. But I think it was great for her, this 12-year-old girl who loves fighting, to get to see that you can do anything. You can accomplish anything with hard work. And we got to hang out with the guy that trained Holly before this, and he said that...
Greg Jackson.
Yes. Yeah. Greg said that she trained so hard every day that, you know, she was almost in tears every day training hard. And that makes me so happy because it just proves, it sounds like hacky and redundant, but hard work really pays off.
Yes.
You put in the sweat and the tears, that's what it takes to get good at anything.
So true. And such a good point. And one of the things Holly said that was cool at the press conference last night, one of the guys said, did you ever doubt that you could do this? She goes, yeah, I doubted. She goes, there were days at the gym when I had a bad day and I'd just walk out and go in my car and cry for 15, 20 minutes thinking I can't do this. You know what I mean? I look terrible in there today. If this is the way I'm going to fight, I'm not going to win. She goes, then I'd go home, I'd eat, I'd relax, and I'd go back at 6 and work on everything that I wasn't good at 2 hours earlier. Until I got it right, you know? And that goes with exactly what you're saying.
You could tell physically when she went into the octagon, she was shredded. She had a six-pack like I've never seen her have before. I mean, she looked in incredible shape. And she was also so poised. Like, even though, obviously, she was under a tremendous amount of pressure and the enormity of the moment, it didn't escape her, but she was bouncing around. She would pace and bounce, pace yeah. and bounce, pace and bounce.
I was watching her during Ronda's entire entrance, which is, you know, sitting that close is something that you don't really get to see on TV. But I had my camera, my eyes focused directly on Holly the entire time Ronda was coming out. And she was doing 5 steps, bounce, go the other way, 5 steps, bounce. When she was getting her mouthpiece put in, when Ronda was stepping in the octagon, Holly was nothing but focused. 100%, no distractions. It was amazing to see.
Well, it was a different kind of a focus because it was a girl who's experienced that kind of intense pressure situation before, that world title pressure. Like when Betch Correa was in Brazil and she was facing Ronda, she had this look on her face before that fight like she was about to go fight a werewolf with a butter knife. You know, she was just like, oh, put on a brave face. She almost knew she was going to get fucked up. It was almost like the enormity of the moment was just like, ooh! Like, you can't breathe. Like, you ever take a shower, a cold shower, and you can't breathe. You just, that's how it looked. Like, she was just overwhelmed. That wasn't the case with Holly. It wasn't the case at all. She knew it was intense pressure. She knew it was a big moment, but she was prepared for it.
Are you happy Hagrid?
She's back again.
Hagrid?
Should we do it now? Oh, yeah. All right. We'll do this and we'll come back to this. What are we at here? We're at 33 minutes. All right. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, I know you're like, oh, it's only 33 minutes. How could it be the whole podcast? We're going to eat. We're going to have a little vino. We got a little Shiraz. And we'll be back. Maybe we'll even grab Greg Jackson from the cheap seats. Bring him up here. See you in a bit. And we're back. Round two, ladies and gentlemen. I was just sitting there. I was watching Birdman. God damn, that's a good movie.
Great movie.
I got to stop listening to Howard Stern. He was saying it was boring. That fucking movie's great.
I haven't seen it yet.
It's really good. It's really good.
Howard was just jealous that somebody's successful with a bigger nose than he has.
Oh, I get it. The bird? Is that what you're saying?
Birdman, yeah.
Oh, okay. I see where you're going. We were just talking about whether or not people get pissed at the length of the podcast. They don't. I mean, they do, but they don't. You know, it's like some people do, but that's the UFC, right? I mean, some people get pissed at everything.
It's no like doubt about it.
I think we're unique in this era. And if you're putting out content, if you're putting out anything you're doing, in that there's too many people that have opinions. Everybody can talk to you. So it's hard to sample and get like an accurate assessment of what's going on. It's hard.
It's true. I mean, we live in a world now where everybody gets to have an opinion.
Yeah. How many times have you guys had to deal with people saying, oh, his fucking cards are watered down and I'm tired of this fucking bullshit and how is this guy still fighting and what is...
Yeah. You have to, you know, especially in this new world we live in, you have to be able to tune that shit out, man. If I listen to the shit that, you know, the media or some of the weirdos on social media said, this thing would be all fucked up.
Do you still fuck with people on social media? Because you used to go back and forth and get angry at people.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't get angry. When I'm on social media... If I'm on there and I'm talking to people, trust me, I'm having fun. I'm not angry.
But
if I have time to kill,
Oh yeah.
Me and a guy called Fat Boy got into it today.
Today?
Yeah. Yeah.
His name is Fat Boy.
Like 4 a.m.
No, is his name?
You call Fat Boy? I said, stick to what it looks like you're good at eating. let me handle this. You know. But
what
I
was
fun
his complaint?
He was saying that. Now that women are fighting in the UFC, I must be really desperate. Like,
what?
We're going out of business, and I must be really desperate. What's funny is, these people on social media, he says to me, you know, he obviously ripping on the UFC, so I hit him back, and I say, where have you been living, under a rock? You know, you don't know who Ronda Rousey is. You didn't know there was a Ronda Rousey-Holly Holm fight. And he says, yeah, apparently a lot of people live under a rock. Nobody watches the UFC anymore. Nobody, you know, something like that. I said, listen, why don't you stick to what it looks like you're good at, eating, and leave the fighting up to me. He comes back and says, I live in the same town. You seem real tough over Twitter. Why don't you come say that to me? Yes, exactly.
Oh, I'm fluttering my eyes.
So I said, I'm easy to find, Fat Boy. Come find me. You know, just like, but I have fun with it. I'm not serious, and I'm not, you know, listen, if you say stupid shit and I got some time, I'll play. I'll go with you. I'll do it. It's fun for me. I'm actually called Joe recently and asked Joe what he thought of roasts. Do you like roasts? And Joe, also very opinionated, does not like roasts at all and doesn't like the type of comedy, I guess, that you know, the type of people that would roast somebody that they're friends with.
Well, I like to watch it, but I don't like to do it.
Participate.
It's my personality. I'm very extreme. Either I'll go to war with you, or I'll go to war for you. Either I love you or I hate you.
Right.
I'm not ambivalent. So like, if I love you, I don't want to mock you.
Right.
This motherfucker, this is the number one writer for roast in the country.
Oh, really?
You don't even know. He writes. He's one of the main writers for all the Comedy Central roasts. If you hear like a good zinger on a Comedy Central roast, it's absolutely brutal. Most likely, Tony Hinchcliffe wrote it.
Okay.
But he's got that sense of humor. My sense of humor is not like that. I feel bad if I make fun of somebody I care about. And if I don't care about you, I don't want to be on a show with you. You know, if like if there was something like roasting Tony, if I had to roast Tony on something, what is this, ma'am?
Cupcakes.
No, thank you.
It's my birthday, 95.
Your birthday?
Not my 95th, no. Qantas's birthday.
Oh. Yeah. I don't eat that. That's how I keep my gorilla's figure.
I'm good too, honey.
Lollies?
What is that?
Lollies?
Lollies? What is a lolly? That's not a lolly. What is that?
It's a raspberry lolly.
A lot? But it's these are like gumdrops.
Yeah. Well, they're different in Australia, aren't
they? Oh, you call them lollies.
Yeah.
Oh, we call lollipops. Like it has a stick. Yeah, yeah.
I thought you said it was Molly.
She's trying to get his ecstasy up.
Birthday Qantas.
Look, you got 16 hours. Don't be a pussy.
Any more Mollies for you?
No. Can I have a cup of coffee, though, please? Just black.
Black? Anyone else?
Where were we? Roasts?
I'm a ball buster.
Yeah.
I like busting balls with my friends and guys. And
well,
so,
no, busting balls is good, but if I wanted to go like he goes, like Tony goes deep.
Mm-hmm.
He writes soul-stealing shit like he does.
Right.
He writes the best jokes for roasts. He's just got this, everybody's personalities. Like, we were talking about this last night. Like, he's like a guy, like, he doesn't do this on stage, but we're joking around, and he'll say puns, like ridiculous play on word puns. My brain doesn't work like that.
Yeah, you know, there's different comedic muscles. There's like puns, there's roasting, mm-hmm. there's staying in the pocket, doing long bits like what you do. You know, you'll talk about the same topic for 10 minutes. There's like different muscles. You know, like I don't move around a lot on stage, which is something that I sort of wish I could do. I can't do impressions like you can either. You know, there's just different muscles and stuff. It's sort of like, you know, to use an analogy, it's sort of like UFC fighters. Like, some people are good at some things, and sometimes the audience wants those certain things. And you got to know which muscle to use against your opponent, if your opponent's that audience, that venue, whether it's in Australia or Sweden or LA, you know?
Yeah, it's just like, when it comes to like the roasting thing, I enjoy watching it. Like, I go to, there's a thing called Roast Battle that they do at the Comedy Store. It's fucking hilarious. They have two comics and they'll go back and forth. Like, one person will tell a joke and the other person will tell a joke, and it's fucking brutal.
It's like a rap battle for comedy.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's very cool.
These motherfuckers, they steal years from each other's lives. Like, we've seen some who are like, oh my God, we have to sit back and hold your head and you just feel the pain of the other person. I can't do that.
Right.
I can't do that.
We're thinking about doing a roast on Fight Pass, you know, roasting different people. Yeah.
So that's your guy.
We'll do it with you.
Oh,
yeah.
That's your guy. That's your guy. I mean, I'm literally, not with a second of hesitation. If you said, you know, I need one guy to roast people, I'd say Tony Hinchcliffe. Like, before you'd say roast people, Tony Hinchcliffe. Before you even got the word people out, I would say Tony.
And there's a huge crossover there because obviously, you know, people, you know, the UFC and roasting is very close. Closely related in the way that if you like watching people get slammed in real life, you'll love to see them get verbally slammed. It all started because I'm from Youngstown, Ohio, a tough neighborhood, and I sort of I'm a little guy, so I defended myself with my words. So it's all sort of in the same ballpark, you know. Yeah, I'd love to help you out with the UFC roast. That's easy.
That'd be awesome.
He's your guy. And Adam Hunter's good at that shit.
Yeah, I knew Adam would be.
He's great with MMA, too, because he knows so much about MMA. You know, he's very, very knowledgeable.
Yep.
You know?
No, I talk to Adam often. Yeah.
So you're going
to
do something on Fight Pass?
We're talking about it, you know.
With fighters?
Mm-hmm.
Tony's a perfect guy, too, because they won't feel like they need to beat his ass.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know how many fighters could actually be roasted. I think they'd have a hard time with it.
A lot can't.
I know.
Dude, I can't tell you how many guys get mad at me where I point out, like, situations that they're not necessarily the best at or skills that they may need to, like, look into. Like, they get mad at me.
I agree. So it was just an idea. It might not even work, but I don't know how many fighters would actually want to be roasted.
I think a lot of them have a great sense of humor. I think you'd be pretty surprised. There's, you know, like, I think if they're from like a different country, like, I bet Brazilians probably wouldn't want to get made fun of that much.
Yeah.
Just throwing it out there. Like, I think it all depends on the culture. But a lot of Americans are into it. You know, like, I know that Brendan Schaub is like obsessed.
Oh, he'd be great with
thing.
It.
So many of those guys that I've met.
What you need to do before you have Cyborg have her first fight in the UFC, have Tony roast her.
Yeah.
Let's see if she still wants to be a part of the big show.
that'd be amazing. I don't even know where I'd begin. Where would I start? Probably
her,
like,
dick.
She's the only person that cuts weight by chopping off her dick.
Yeah, there'd be a lot of different angles you'd approach that.
I think it would be tough for a fighter to do a roast.
So, back to the Ronda Rousey Holly Holm thing. Obviously, you can't talk to Ronda right now because it's too soon. It's too intense. It's emotion. She's probably just in agony right now. But how long do you wait before you think about scheduling a rematch?
Yeah. Well, normally when fighters come off a fight like the Ronda fight, the Lawler McDonald fight, you know, you don't even talk to him about fighting for the last Cormier fight with yeah, you just wait, and probably a month, about a month, you call and say, hey, what's going on? What are you thinking? How are you feeling? You know,
do you have lunch with her? Do you gonna like talk, yeah, call her on the phone, or do you want to do it in person?
Ronda?
Yeah.
You know, after this thing, when Holly's gonna be in a fucking whirlwind when she gets back, man. She's gonna be, you know, normally she'd probably just get home, would take some time off, hang out with the fans. She's gonna be on radio tours, television. She's gonna have a lot of work to do. Ronda will be able to go home and just chill out, relax for a while, get her head together, heal up a little bit. And then, you know, I'll see her next week in person. And then won't talk about fighting.
You won't talk about fighting next week? You don't think she'll want to talk about it immediately?
No.
No?
If she does, that's cool. If she wants to talk, we can talk, but I won't talk to her about it. I'll give her a month.
What will you talk about when you say, hey, Divya? What? How about the weather?
Just hang out.
Yeah?
Have lunch with her, hang out with her, see how she's feeling, see how she's doing. You know. Yeah.
Your job is very weird, man, because your job is, you're not just a promoter. In a lot of ways, like, you have to be almost like a counselor or like a psychologist in a way.
I deal with so many different egos and personalities and quirky, you know, yeah, without a doubt. Personal problems, business problems. You know, a lot of stuff. We deal with a lot of stuff with the fighters.
Well, you do, like, when we go back to that, what we were talking about earlier, that 2001 Vladimir Matyushenko, Tito Ortiz fight.
Yeah.
Like, when that was when you guys were first started. Did you ever imagine that you would have this kind of role now? Like, what did you see the role of a promoter being? Because you're not just a promoter. You're a promoter in a very weird way. Because you're a promoter, but you're also like the main personality behind the UFC. Like, you mean, like, when I checked into the hotel yesterday, they called me Mr. White. I'm like, we're both bald, but I'm not Mr. White. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they say, oh, this fighter looking guy is coming in here, must be Mr. White, you know?
I see shit on social media where it says you and I are turning into each other. Which is fucking funny.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah, you know what? When you think of the term promoter, most promoters are fucking have a secretary and a fax machine.
Right.
Seriously, there's no infrastructure there. There's no. We're so different because not only do we have 500 fighters under contract, we have 300 and something employees too.
Yeah.
We have employees. You know, in a weird way, we're more like a media company. Yeah, we promote fights. It's really morphed into this weird thing. But you know, a lot of the stuff, a lot of the things is in the growing pains of building this business, the relationships that you have to have with a lot of these guys. You know, there's some guys on the undercards that I've never even met before, and then there's people that I'm really really close to. And you were saying it earlier. You know, you learn to care about these people, know people that are involved in their lives, and you become close.
Yeah, and you know,
and
how
when you see them lose,
yeah,
and you know,
painful.
And then there's so many times that you know, two people go in and care about both of them, and somebody's going to win or lose that night. You know, there's some fights that I don't even want to watch.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like shit. I don't even want to watch this fight. This is going to be. One of these good people are going to have to lose.
Yeah, and there's no way around it. There's no way around it.
And then there's times when I'm like, you know, it's the complete opposite, too. I mean, let's be honest, where I don't have a great relationship with a guy, you know?
You know, there's a parallel between you and me, too, in that there really wasn't a you before you. and there really wasn't that many people doing commentary before me. Yep. Like, you're not like a normal promoter in a sense that, you have Don King, who was like, only in America, but it's all, you know, it's mostly showmanship and bullshit, and
right.
And you just somehow or another figured out how to just be Dana White. You know, do you remember like some sort of a conscious decision to not put on some sort of fake professional attitude, or is that just not in you at all?
Yeah, you know, I don't know.
You're you. You're the you I knew like before you were famous. So you're right. The same dude.
Thanks, man. I don't know, man. I don't know really how to explain it, but I just go in there and we put on fights, and we try to put on the best fights that are available with the best talent that we have. For instance, I believed that the Ronda Rousey Holly Holm fight was the fight, but you get all these fucking conspiracy weirdos that start talking about. All anybody wants to say is, oh, I want to see Dana White's face after Holly Holm beat her, and I want to see what he... Two women are going in there. Ronda and Holly are going in there. Somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose. I mean, anybody that's stupid enough to fucking think that I think, you know, somebody could win forever or somebody else couldn't win is ridiculous. Or that Ronda hasn't fought the best competition available. Ronda's fought all the best girls in the world at 135 pounds.
Well, the only
we
argument
brought
against
Holly
it is cyborg,
Holm in.
Right?
Yeah.
But she's never
made
the
weight.
Yeah.
Make the weight.
Make the weight. Yeah.
Cyborg has had every opportunity for this fight. Yeah. All she has had to do is make the weight. She hasn't tried. With that much money on the line and all the things that are going on, look at last night's event. Holly Holm stepped up and took the opportunity and won. She won the fucking fight. The opportunity was there for her. The opportunity has been there for Cyborg this whole time. Her and Tito got out there and said all that crazy shit that they said, and she'd die if she made weight and all that stuff that was going on. What was Ronda supposed to go to 145 or fight her at a catch weight for what? Ronda's the 135-pound champion. Like it or not, that's her weight division, and that's where she fights. There's plenty of women there. And I felt like going into this next fight, I saw the Miesha Tate fight twice. Saw that fight. Know how that fight ends, you know? And yes, we did set that fight up as a contender fight. You know what I mean? But I felt like that wasn't the best fight. That wasn't the best fight. I felt we brought Holly Holm in to fight Ronda Rousey, and I felt like that was the best fight to put on. We're literally in a fucking meeting room. We sit in this boardroom all day. And I'm like, we gotta make this Holly Holm fight, man. This is the fight. I mean, you can ask Lorenzo, it's exactly the way it went down. This is the fucking girl. This is the next big challenge for Ronda. This girl's fucking tall. She's got the height and reach advantage. She fucking kicks. She stays on the outside. Ronda's never faced anybody like that. This is the fight to make. Not to mention the fact that she's undefeated and she's got legit boxing credentials. This is the fight. And we did it.
Obviously. Yeah. I mean, we're right now, it's kind of funny because we're in a plane. We're flying over the ocean. And when we land, it's the buzz just has kind of started. I mean, it exploded, but it's almost like a tidal wave. And that tidal wave is just going to reach all across social media and all across television shows and radio shows. And, you know, by the time we land, it's going to be Monday morning. All the morning radio shows are going to be talking about this. All the television shows are going to be talking about this. That's when the party really begins. And that's when the Holly Holm coming out party really begins.
Sure.
And, you know, we're right now, we're kind of like sitting here while the fuse is lit.
I've been doing this for 15 years, man. And let me tell you what, anybody can beat anybody on any given day, you know? Even reporters and fans and even you when this fight was first announced. Kevin Ali's like, I'm not flying over there for a 15-second fight. I think it'll be over in 15 seconds. And what, you just You never
Freddie
know.
Roach said it. A lot of people said it. Well, I didn't think that Holly was going to get destroyed, but I thought that Amanda Nunes was a more dangerous fight based on her performance against Sarah McMahon, because she smashed Sarah McMahon, knocked her down, beat her up. And I know she had beaten up Kat Zingano in the first round, although she got stopped later in the round. I think Kat Zingano still's dangerous as fuck. She just made a big rookie mistake. Yep. She just charged, got caught in a scramble, and, you know, Ronda is so nasty at catching those arm bars. And even in this fight, she had been tagged with all those fucking straight lefts. She had been rocked, and she still, when they went to the ground, she was immediately threatening with an arm bar. She still has the best arm bar technique in MMA.
There was one part for a second where she caught her arm standing and grabbed it like a crocodile.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I don't know what she was going to do with it, but she fucking had it.
Well, she tried to take her down with it. Yeah, yeah. She had 2-1-1.
Had it, and she got, you know, Holly just kept fighting. She got defensive, and she just kept rolling out of it.
Well, I think this is a pivotal time for Ronda, because she's a huge superstar, she's a huge movie star, she's a huge celebrity, but what got her to that position is being a great fighter. And there's a balance there somewhere. And you got to find out, where's the balance? Is the balance spending all this time working on movies and all this other shit? Or is the balance going back to fucking Rocky IV? Going to that cabin in the woods and going running up the hills of the snow and, you know, and focusing on just fighting. And that might be what she needs to do now. I mean, if she, or that's it, you know, or figure out what it is. I mean, she's got enough money now, I assume. She probably, if she's frugal, doesn't have to work again for the rest of her life.
She doesn't,
right?
No.
So she has to decide what she wants to do. Does she want to figure out what went wrong, figure out what she could have done better, get back to the drawing board, maybe work with some new coaches that are going to work with her on kicks and distancing, on footwork, or maybe figure out some other ways to try to get Holly down other than the collar tie and clinching? I mean,
she's the mentally strongest fucking athlete I've ever met in my life. When she gets over this loss, she's gonna be a savage, man. I mean, she was a maniac and a hard worker when she was the best in the world. What's she gonna be like now that she lost? And the thing that makes this fight great again is Holly Holm. Now everybody knows how talented Holly Holm is, and that Holly Holm is legit, and Holly Holm is a workhorse too. Both of these two are going to take the next few months, go back in, start working on shit, and they're going to clash again. And their second fight will be fucking awesome.
Does Ronda have a broken jaw? Because social media was reporting.
No, that's bullshit. There's nothing wrong with Ronda. Ronda...
Well, there's definitely something wrong with her.
Well, no.
I mean, she's concussed. She's hurt.
She had a huge fucking cut in her lip. Her lip was split open. And I was there, and I was like, you know what? We don't want a doctor sewing that fucking lip up. What's her lip going to look like if a doctor sew? We brought in, like, the best plastic surgeon from Australia last night. He came in late last night and sewed her lip up, and her lip looks awesome today.
When they do that, do they do interior stitches?
Yeah,
is that what
they
do?
Sew it from the inside out. And plastic surgeons are just so much better than doctors. I'll give you an example here. It's something fucking crazy. So at the last fight, when we were at the Cormier fight, Cormier Gustafsson, sitting there, my phone starts fucking ringing during the fight. And it's my sister-in-law. So I pick up the phone during the fight, and my wife is on the phone going fucking crazy. So we have a English Mastiff, 2-year-old English Mastiff, who jumped on my daughter and ripped her ear off her head in my house.
How did he do it?
He fucking just jumped at her.
His paw hit it?
No, teeth.
What?
Ripped her ear in half this way and then off the head. So it was hanging by the thing here, like by the bottom of the ear.
So, and how old is your daughter?
My daughter is 9.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. 9 years old. Fucking dog rips her ear off during the Cormier-Gustafsson fight. My wife is hysterical. Can't even understand a word she's saying. So I have to calm her down. What the fuck is going on? Tell me what's happening. She tells me. I said, okay. I grab Doc D, one of the doctors for the UFC. He gets on the phone. He calls Las Vegas. The first thing he did, he's trying to set up a doctor. I said, I don't want a doctor. I want a plastic surgeon. Get me a plastic surgeon. He calls in this plastic surgeon. They go to the hospital. They had to wait like an hour and a half. So you can imagine they're freaking out. They got to wait an hour and a half because they're waiting for the plastic. But the plastic surgeon came and put her ear back on and then fixed the ear this way, sewed it back together. My daughter's ear looks unbelievable. Because you can't have a doctor do that kind of shit. Because if you have a doctor do it, all he cares about is getting the fucking ear back on, not how it looks, you know. But you cosmetically, it's like a doctor will come in and stitch Rhonda's lip, but then Rhonda's lip is going to look weird.
Right.
So when we do fights in Vegas, there's a doctor named Dr. Shu. I don't know if you've ever met Dr. Shu. He's a tall Asian guy with glasses. He is the man when it comes to, he sews up these cuts. Because, as you know, in fighting, cuts are a big problem. They have to be sewn up the right way, not only cosmetically, but if you're going to continue to fight, you have to sew them up so that they don't rip open all the time and get a lot of scar tissue under there and things like that. So we're very, very careful and stuff like that. But if anything traumatic ever happens to your kids or your wife, you're looking for a plastic surgeon, not a doctor.
What the fuck did you do to that dog? Did you kill that dog?
Dog's gone.
Dog bit your daughter's ear.
Dog's gone, yeah.
I ought to kill that dog myself.
I know. It's crazy.
What the fuck, man?
Great.
I have a Mastiff too, but he's the sweetest dog in the world. So my dog would never do anything.
You know, my daughter had a fucking ice cream cone, and the dog
wanted that ice cream.
Was trying to get the ice cream cone, and my daughter said no, and the dog just freaked out, man. At the end of the day, even though it's a dog, it's a fucking wild animal, and they're fucking nuts with food. You know, when you have food there, you could feed your dog till he's full, and then you're sitting there eating food, and the dog is like fucking, you know, he wants some more food.
Wow.
Oh, look at this.
Oh, hello, fellas. We're doing a podcast right now.
Sorry, we're interrupting.
You guys circle jerking?
You guys hanging out?
Just one way.
Upstairs?
Yes.
Good luck with that.
This plane is so badass that it has two different levels. There's 500 people on this plane, 1,100 bags, and there's actually a lounge upstairs where people can hang out in the lounge.
Yeah, there's like a little bar area. These Qantas flights are fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, this is the first podcast, by the way, that's ever been done in an actual pod.
Yeah, we're in a pod.
We're in a pod, that's right.
This is a podcast.
That's history. Right
it
now.
Might be,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody else just does it in a room. This is not a room.
Well, how did it become? It's from iPods, right?
I guess.
Yeah, that's the name, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Apple knows how to get their branding in everywhere.
Well, Chuck Liddell had that crazy cut in his lip after the Rich Franklin fight, and now you can't even notice it.
Yep. What's even crazier is Robbie Lawler.
Oh, yeah.
We had Robbie Lawler's done with a plastic surgeon, too. And actually, the Jessica Penne fight, when she fought Joanna Jędrzejczyk, see her nose? We flew her straight to L.A., and she went and saw the best plastic surgeon in L.A., and we got her nose fixed. So, everybody, next time you see Jessica Penne, you'll notice that her nose looks phenomenal. You look at that gash and what that looked like. If we sent her to a doctor, she'd look horrible right now. A doctor would have stitched or stapled that thing together, and she would look terrible. We sent her to the best plastic surgeon in L.A., and she looks phenomenal.
That's amazing, by the way. I remember her nose after that fight. I've seen snowmen with better noses than
you son of a bitch. You had one ready. Yeah. You had one ready.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah. You have to.
You know who Kevin Ross is? A Muay Thai fighter from America.
No.
Great fighter. Fights for Lion Fight. He was talking about how he got hit with some elbows in one of his fights in Vegas, and the doctor used staples, and the doctor was so shitty, he actually stapled, like, one of the, it was in the crease of the actual cut. Instead of, like, pinching the cut together,
right,
the staple went in the hole. He's like, this fucking guy was blind or drunk.
What people don't realize is when you go to a doctor is not worried about how you're going to look after. It's about healing whatever is... I got to close this hole. I have to fix this thing.
He's not an artist.
He's not an artist, exactly. So when you go to see these doctors and they give you stitches, you are going to have a nasty scar. Fact. I don't care who your doctor is. That's a fact. That's
now,
the way it goes.
When they do that, though, can they fix that? Can they cut that scar and redo it with, like, a really good doctor?
Probably, but for, like, a girl like Jessica Penny,
right.
it would cost her a ton of money to go do it later and
yeah.
all this stuff. Fuck that. Let's just get it
and
fixed.
And it might
now.
Not even work because, like, there's going to be all that scar tissue and healing from the
yep.
first sutures and... You have to cut that out, maybe. I don't know. What am I? I'm just making shit up.
Exactly. Listen, there's a completely different angle to this thing now when dealing with women. We have women who fight, and you can't have Jessica Penny walking
like
around with a huge scar on her nose and stuff. Like we get a lot of shit. We take care of a lot of people, man. When it really comes down to it. You know, we don't say, hey, send Jessica Penne over to some doctor and stitch her. We sent her to the baddest plastic surgeon in L.A., and he fixed her nose. Sent Robbie Lawler to a guy who fixed his lip. Chuck Liddell with his lip. Rhonda when her lip was just broken. We literally got the best plastic surgeon in Australia. Not Melbourne. We got the best guy in Australia. You know, so we're pretty big on the medical side with the fighters.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be, like, an incredibly difficult job to do, to, like, stitch up a cut like that and make sure that it heals in a nice, thin, clean line like that. You know, my friend John Wayne Parr, he was at the fights last night. He's a 10-time world Muay Thai champion. He's an Australian guy. He's had more than 300 stitches in his face.
That's
in
crazy.
His face.
That's crazy, yeah.
What's that?
Chocolates.
No, thank you. Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're offering us all this stuff. We want you to hear what it's like in first class, people. Just give you a little taste.
Lollies? No. Chocolate? No.
No job, anything at all I can get for you.
Coffee?
Yeah. Is there a blowjob thing going on up there?
Oh, they didn't offer you that?
No.
Oh, yeah.
It was the guy, though, right?
Yeah, it was the guy. His name's John. It was amazing, by the way. I've had two.
I've had two.
It's really incredible, though. Like what you do, it's amazing. I grew up, and Joe's about to kill me. I grew up a huge pro wrestling fan, and there's something about what Vince McMahon has been able to accomplish with the crazy circus that he's running and turn it into a huge company with tons of fans that watch every week, even though it's all fake. And you've been able to...
I like how you said it's all fake.
A real life, because I've always...
Fake, right? It's
yes,
fake?
I've always admitted that on your show, Joe.
What is it?
You're the only one that keeps making it look...
What is it?
It's fake. Still fake. Always has been.
It's all bullshit, right?
Right. Just like your Game of Thrones. Exactly.
No. Game of Thrones.
But it's amazing to me that you have been able to... accomplish what that with reality. Like everything he did, he wrote it out himself and wrote scripts and has they have 20-30 writers that he pays six figures a year, big time, more than six regular, like lower middle six figures a year they all get paid to write that stuff every week. And you have been able to grow this thing, and I guess that's really like it's mind-blowing because
you get those writers all day.
Yeah.
They're never going to do what Conor McGregor can do just on instinct.
Right. I have this thing that reality is better than any script you could ever write, and that's the reason the UFC so it's so real and it's so like last night, man. You put on the fight with the best fighters in the world, and reality is going to happen, man. And when you see it, it goes fucking global and electric like it did last night, man. Even Triple H. Your boy Triple H hit me up last night and said, wow. He goes, what a show and what a shocker. That's what Triple H hit me with last night. It's like, you know, when you do have that reality and it goes off like it went off last night, it's bigger than anything you could ever write.
And what it does is it makes it so that you never know what's going to happen. Now people have to watch every fight because people can hate and people can say that they knew that Holm was going to win. That's the biggest, huge, bigger. It's bigger than this plane. The amount of bullshit that is.
True. Nobody True. Knew that was going to go
even
down.
The,
like
even
that.
The people who bet on Holly and had all that shit last night. There's one reason and one reason only that they bet on Holly, because of the odds. The odds were so big. Why not take a shot?
Yeah. Or they were her family. Okay. Or a family or a friend. Hello.
Sorry to interrupt. Would you like to go up to the business class? We've got a lounge upstairs. Would that be more comfortable?
No, we're good. We're good.
Okay, but if the seatbelt sign goes on, you're going to be in trouble.
No, he's a ninja. He's an acrobat.
Oh, you can flip backwards?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But these are all my people here.
I know.
These are our people.
Yeah, we're good.
So you can do the backflip. Yep. I just thought I'd offer you the lounge if you wanted
to. No, we're good. But thank you, though. Right. Thank you. It's so nice here.
Yeah, so that was a polite strong arm. She was trying to strong arm us up to the lounge, and yeah. Joe shut her down.
No, we would
not like to go to the lounge.
You think that was?
Bait it. She was definitely. That was her polite way of saying, you guys should go up to the lounge. People want to sleep now.
Is that what it is? Sleep?
Yeah.
Really? Isn't it like 10 in the morning or something? What fucking time is it?
Yeah, but we're landing at 6 in the morning. And
right, but what time is it? What time is it in L.A.? It's only 3 p.m. in Australia.
Right.
Okay? If people want to go to sleep, that's their fucking problem.
Oh, so that means that would be the middle of the night in Vegas.
In L.A., it is 8:20. It's 8:20 L.A. and 3:20 p.m. Yeah. in Australia. I haven't been able to sleep since I got here. I'm so confused. I sleep like 3 hours. I wake up. It's 5 in the morning.
I got a beautiful sleeping pill for you, pal, if you want to take it.
I don't take sleeping pills, man. I don't take them.
It's the only one you don't do is sleeping pills?
Yeah, I don't fuck I want to be able to wake up. I don't like it. I was in a hotel fire in San Francisco.
Oh, really?
In the middle of the night. It actually wasn't a fire. Some people had set off the fire extinguishers, and it filled the room up with that smoke, you know, that fog that those fire extinguishers create. And it was 4:30 in the morning. These alarms went off. Wah, 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 wah. I got up, didn't know what the fuck was going on. I'm trying to shut my alarm clock off.
You had a sleeping pill?
No, I didn't. But all the people that were in the fucking hotel had sleeping pills. And it was in San Francisco, and they had this narrow staircase, and it's really hard to get down the staircase. It's, like, really narrow. And these people were walking, like, real slow down the stairs. And half of them were fucking sleeping. They were, like, waking up as they were walking. They were all whacked out on sleeping pills. Because a lot of people, when they stay in hotels or when they travel, they'll take a sleeping pill. And it was dangerous. It was dangerous to the point where I was ready to start a fucking stampede. Yeah. I was like, why are you fuckers not running? Like, there's an alarm going off, an announcement saying the building's on fire, and you people are strolling down the stair, and half of them look like zombies. And I've had some friends that have done some shit when they were on sleeping pills, like Kevin James. Mm-hmm. Kevin James takes sleeping pills to, like, cook himself dinner and doesn't realize he cooked dinner, wake up in the morning, like, what the fuck is this? And then someone has to tell him that he cooked it. Like, I'm not down with that.
No, I've seen some crazy shit, too, with sleeping pills, man. What's funny, I took one. Remember I told you on the way here, I took one when I saw you.
Yeah.
I said, hey, I got a sleeping pill. I woke up, my throat was so fucking sore. I don't know if I was snoring like a beast or...
I don't know. I usually don't have a problem with sleeping. And I figure if I'm not awake or if not, I'm not sleeping, I'm awake. I'll do something.
Right.
And then I'll do something until I'm tired, then I'll sleep. And when I get back to L.A., I'll be whacked out, but I'll just work out and then I'll deal with it, you know? The drugs that I like, they're like, you know, they don't incapacitate you like that. I'm not into sedatives.
Right. Got it.
Yeah. I don't do sleeping pills either, but if I need to fall asleep on this flight, I might go a couple rows back and have Holly Holm kick me in the neck as hard as she can.
And she's not even on the flight. She's probably still back in Australia, right?
Yeah, she was trying to leave today. She was supposed to stay a couple more days, and then she changed her mind and wanted to leave today, so I don't know if she got out or not.
Do you schedule fighters to leave a couple days after so they can recover?
Yeah. Yeah, you give the fighters on the card a couple of days. You'll see fighters getting on all banged up, and I just always think after you've had a fight, you should rest a couple of days.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Some people want to get right home. You can't tell them what to do.
But. Right. But I would just imagine that, like, after a brutal fight, that your head would be so fucking swollen and everything. Like, you wouldn't want to get on a plane. Like, it sucks being on a plane when your nose is stuffed up.
It's true. People don't really understand or appreciate how fucking tough these human beings really are that compete in the UFC, man. These guys are so tough. And girls, it's pretty fucking spectacular how tough these people are.
Well, you were talking about the Robbie Lawler, Rory McDonald fight, and after that fight, Rory tweeted a photo of his face like the next day, and his eyes were closed shut and his nose was fucked up. And what's crazy about it, he said that it was the greatest night of his life.
Yep.
And like, that's how you know you're supposed to be a fighter.
That's it. They're special people. They're different than all of us, man. That's why I when I think about fighting, these people are so special that very few people can actually do it. You know how many people can actually become a top three fighter in the fucking world? How many people can become a champion and then hold the belt for any amount of time? Very few people. They're very special, and I think that's why, as human beings, we're so in awe of professional fighters, you know? I always say that you know, fighting's in our fucking DNA, and we look at fighters and we're like, holy shit, that fucking guy is the toughest dude in the world, or that girl is the toughest girl in the world, and why we put them on such a big pedestal, they deserve to be. But at the same time, the craziest, loneliest fucking, you know, Ronda Rousey loses one fight and everybody turns on her and starts shitting her. Anderson Silva loses one fight. Oh, he was never that fucking good anyway. The 85-pound division is weak. It's the craziest fucking thing.
You know what that is? Is that the people that are mean and nasty and insulting after fights are the weakest aspects of humanity. They're the people that are scared and terrified, and they know they could never do that. So when someone does do that and falters, they just, yeah, you fucking loser. Yeah, you fucking kill yourself. Yeah. Because that's their own demons, their own insecurity, their knowledge that they could never do that in a million years. So when someone does it and fails, all of their insecurities just come flying out of their stupid fucking mouth or their fingers. That's what it is. When I went on Instagram last night and Twitter, and I was reading all that mean shit that people were typing about Ronda, I knew what the fuck that is. That's the weakest aspects of humanity. If we could pluck those people out of our culture, the world would be a way better place. And if the people listening to this, if you're one of those people, you need to fucking go for a walk. Recognize who you are, because that's why you did that. That woman put everything that they are on the line. And for you to insult them after they came up short, the reason why you're doing that is because you're a cunt. You're a cunt of epic proportions, and there's no way around that. There's no, I might not be. I might actually know something. Nope, you don't know shit. No, you're a cunt. Because if you do know shit, you would just look at it and you would recognize the sacrifice and the drama of it all and the danger of it all, and you would have respect for them.
It's true. So well said. And these special individuals who walk this fucking earth and go out and fight in front of millions of people and lay it all on the line. You know, I've seen guys walk in with the fucking belt and an entourage, go home in a fucking ambulance and by themselves. It's crazy,
yep.
Man.
Well, that's when they find out who's really their friend when it all goes down. I mean, how many fighters have developed these gigantic entourages? Like, remember Mike Tyson in his prime was buying everybody cars? Look at Floyd Mayweather. Yep. Floyd Mayweather is hanging around with, he's got a goddamn army with him, a crew of people. If Manny Pacquiao knocked him dead, you know, if one of those guys knocked him dead, all those dudes would disappear. Everybody would disappear. If he went broke, everybody would disappear.
As soon as he retires, you know.
Yeah. Well, he has retired for what? I don't believe it. I think he'll be back. I'll be back for at least one more fight, especially when Manny Pacquiao starts talking about coming back. Why wouldn't he come back and make another $100 million, right? But I think that it's this, the Klingons and the hangers-on and the yes people, they're some of the most dangerous people for a fighter's ego, because what a fighter wants, they want affirmation. They want a reinforcement of the love that they're missing, which kind of leads them to fighting in the first place. And they surround themselves with all these people that are boosting their ego up. Those people are fucking dangerous for you, though.
So
have you seen what Teddy Atlas is doing? Teddy Atlas is training Timothy Bradley now. amazing. You see Bradley's last fight?
No, we talked about that. I didn't see it, but you said it was awesome.
Phenomenal. Bradley looked fantastic. But one of the best parts about it is Teddy Atlas said, no entourage, no cell phones, no nothing. He doesn't want music playing. No one's in there. It's just him and him. They look at each other, they go over technique, they focus on the game plan, they focus on what the work that has to be done, and that's it. You know, Floyd Mayweather's got a goddamn circus, and he's talented, and he can pull it off with that circus.
Right.
But the moment he can't, and those guys have to go out and get real jobs, is the moment he finds out that they weren't really his friends. They were paid friends.
Right.
They were employed friends. Friends that were there to try to boost his ego up, and their only occupation is like, they're professional friends. They're there to be Floyd Mayweather's friends.
Yep. Floyd is Floyd's good at the circus, though. You know,
before Floyd
had the circus, you know, people weren't as interested. He really took it to another level. When he was Pretty Boy Floyd, nobody cared.
Nobody cared.
He became Money Mayweather, everybody cared.
He's a wizard. I mean, look, that's the same thing with Ronda. You know, Lady Gaga doesn't fucking get it. Like, all these people don't get it. Like, half of what Ronda does is psychological, but half of it's marketing. All that stuff is marketing. You know, you talk all that crazy shit, that's where you get all the money. The money comes from what Conor McGregor's doing. You know, people, oh, I don't like what Conor McGregor's doing. Mixed martial arts is supposed to be about respect. Look, you got maybe 10 years if you're lucky. But realistically, the great fighters, you look at the great fighters, they have like an 8-year period that they can operate at this incredibly high RPM. And then your body starts giving out. You can't take any shots anymore. Your fucking knees are bad. Your back goes bad. Your neck's all fucked up. At a certain point in time, it fails. You have two things you're trying to accomplish during that time. You're trying to win. You're trying to make as much money as you can. And the best way to make as much money is get people to pay attention. And the best way to get people to pay attention is to talk a gang of shit.
I'm going to tell you right now. So I was laying in bed last night after the fight, you know, in Melbourne. The fight was over around 5 something. We were all back at our hotels by 9. The Notorious was on. Have you seen the Notorious? That is a fucking great show, man. They literally ran 5 episodes of it last night. I laid in bed and watched 5 fucking episodes back to back. I'm like, Jesus Christ, this is really fucking good.
Connor's
it's a good show. I mean, it's unbelievable. They just follow this kid around, and it is compelling, great television.
He's a wizard.
And it's amazing because it does this thing where either you fall in love with them, right? And this goes for McGregor, Mayweather, and Rousey. Either you fall in love with them and you want to watch them retain their championship, or you start to hate them and you want to watch them lose. Either way, you're watching, and it's beautiful. And again, you know, it all goes
pro wrestling.
You know, as weird as it is, and the fact that it's not real and this and that, you know, that's definitely something that, you know, they built their entire MO off of, you know.
Yeah.
Pro wrestling fans are going to go crazy to hear you say that. You hear what I called it fake? That time I had every crazy lunatic pro wrestling fan on my fucking Twitter for like 3
days.
Weeks, man.
Well, Tony and I did a podcast, and there's only a few times where I've gotten, like, there's 2 times where I got, like, more hate than anything I've ever done. One of them was when I said that Fallon Fox, that man that became a woman, shouldn't be fighting women. Right. I got all the fucking progressives and social justice warriors coming after me for being a transphobe. And the other time was when I said that pro wrestling was retarded, because Tony and I did a podcast, and I just mocked him for about an hour. I got a fucking tsunami of misspelled tweets my way. It's like I was drowning in misspelled tweets. And I was like, I just wanted to correct their grammar. That's not your. It's Y-O-U apostrophe R-E, fucks.
That,
you know, it's
so
like
funny, just, I got the same thing. People were going crazy. I mean, even then there's these guys that used to wrestle and guys that have podcasts and all these things that were on there. And then Stone Cold Steve Austin came to my rescue. I said, listen, I don't think that he was here. He said fake, but, you know, they don't know the work and the this, that. And
yeah,
he didn't mean any disrespect. You know, Stone Cold had to come and save me from all the fucking lunatics.
Yeah, that's what happens. All you know,
Mick Foley did that for me.
Yeah, Mick Foley's the man. Everybody knows that it's fake. Where they get super defensive and crazy is if you say that they're not, like, real athletes, because they do, like, every night, you know what I mean? They do a different arena every night. On Mondays it's filmed, and then they do pay-per-views on Sundays. So the only thing that really ruckuses up the fans if you say that, like, those guys aren't real athletes.
Well, it is a tough job.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Those guys put in some fucking serious numbers.
Yeah,
I mean, how many days a year do they go on the road? Like, that was one of the reasons why Brock Lesnar decided that fighting in the fucking UFC at the highest level of the game with one previous MMA fight was easier than doing pro wrestling. That goes to show you how hard that entertainment business is.
It's true, man. They're on the road like 330 days a year.
Yeah.
And 230 days a year. And 330. Yeah, I think it's 330. It's a big number.
It's a lot.
It's almost the entire year.
And they're always in pain. That's why a lot of them have pain pill problems.
Oh, yeah.
Every one of the people over at the WWE are fans of UFC. And any time I've ever had any type of interaction with a WWE, star, they're always really good people. Really good people, really nice, totally respectful, just like the best people to deal with. So I have nothing against wrestling at all.
Do you think CM Punk is ever going to actually fight?
I do, yeah. So what happened was he got hurt. He hurt his shoulder, and he was fucking devastated. He thought he was going to have surgery, and he didn't. He lucked out and got out with therapy. And so he went through his therapy, and he's coming back now.
Tell him to go to Dr. D. Take him to that guy in Vegas and get the stem cells.
That's
oh, my God.
Maybe I will tell him that.
You should get stem cells in every part of your body. Just do it. Trust me. The greatest thing I've ever done. I'm going back in December. I just want him to start shooting shit up, shoot my elbows up. Fuck it. Dwayne Ludwig told me he did that. Dwayne had his hips done, his shoulders done. Didn't even need anything wrong. Just decided to just get stem cells shot in there to heal things. It's incredible. It's total next level shit. You were saying that guy in Germany, what's his name? Peter
Welling. Dr. Peter Welling.
Tell me, what was he about the collagen thing?
Yeah, so they're working on this thing over there where, you know how testosterone replacement therapy works? You know, as we get older, our testosterone levels drop, and then they can, you know, give you an injection and put this testosterone back into your body, make you feel younger, sex life, all these other things. Well, now what these guys are working on is these collagen shots. So they give you these injections of collagen, and it replaces the collagen in your body. Collagen is what keeps your skin young, and as we all get older, it goes away. They did this thing, I guess, that they've been testing on this 10-year-old rat, and the rat looks like a fucking rat, looks like a baby rat now.
Wow.
Yeah. So they're literally right now, I guess this shit's ready to go. They're just building up the infrastructure over there, because when this thing comes out and when they announce this, it's going to be a $1 trillion business. It's going to be ridiculous.
Now, is it they're injecting collagen, or are they injecting something that makes you regenerate collagen?
Again, don't take the fucking, I can't give you the scientific explanation of it, but they basically came up with this thing where you get these injections and it makes you younger again. It's almost like replacing the collagen in your body, and your wrinkles go away.
Wow.
They go away, and your face looks like your face looked when you were younger. So ladies out there that are banging your faces all up with all this crazy shit that they're doing, plastic surgery and all this stuff, I'd lay off it and wait for this stuff to come out. We're fucking year away from this happening.
Hang in there, gals. Just hang in there. You know, it's interesting, we're talking about testosterone replacement. That's been one of the biggest controversies in MMA over the last few years, was that for a while the Nevada State Athletic Commission was allowing testosterone use exemption. So a few guys got it, and you know, Vitor maybe unfairly takes the brunt of the criticism for that, because his results on testosterone were so fucking spectacular. When you get an old guy like Vitor who has all that experience and all that knowledge, and you give him testosterone and his body performs like a young guy's body, but with all that knowledge and all that experience, you get what happened in the Henderson fight, the Bisping fight, and the Rockhold fight, where he just looks fucking sensational. But now, you know, now they pulled out. They pulled the testosterone use exemptions back, and these guys are trying to compete. And like Mark Hunt, perfect example. The first fight with Bigfoot Silva and Mark Hunt was this crazy fucking 5-round war. And after the fight, Bigfoot tests positive, or not positive, because we knew he was on testosterone.
He was allowed to take it. He actually out of all the fucking people, he's a guy that actually medically has to take it, and not because of his age, because he has some type of pituitary or something like
tumor in his pituitary gland that causes gigantism, which stops his body's production of a lot of hormones. It interrupts a lot of hormones.
So he's a guy who actually really has to take it, or bad things could happen to him. And the problem was, he took the shot the week of the fight or 2 days before. You're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to do that. And the sad part is, you know, some of these doctors say that wouldn't even help him. At the time that he took it, to have that much in him, it wouldn't even...
They say that, but I don't think they know, because he...
No, that's the problem.
Yeah.
The problem became that if you talk to fucking six guys, they give you six different answers.
Yeah.
And that's what started to happen with this shit. Nobody was really an expert on it. Nobody really knew what it would do or wouldn't do. And if you had two different... If the commission had a doctor, yet he was talking to his own doctor, they would disagree on what the...
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and not to mention the fact that if you have something good, when testosterone first came out, I said, well, this is going to be good. You know, guys can replace it, and guys' careers and this, that, and everything else. But the other problem is if you have these guys that are like, well, if this much is good for me,
mm-hmm.
how much is this going to do
right.
for me? So they're cheating on it. So they're basically through their whole camp using so much.
Mm-hmm.
That they might as well be on steroids.
Yeah, well, they are on steroids. They're taking hyperhuman levels, and that was what had happened with Mark Hunt. But look, the proof is in the pudding, because if you watch that Mark Hunt fight, Mark Hunt hit Bigfoot with everything but the fucking kitchen sink, and Bigfoot just ate it. He ate it. And Mark Hunt's one of the biggest knockout artists in the sport, and those two went to war for 5 rounds. In the rematch, Bigfoot's off the testosterone replacement. Mark Hunt hits him with one clean right hand and drops him. You know, it's just...
I could see it at weigh-ins, by the way. Bigfoot was having trouble taking his shirt off. I know it sounds crazy, but like, it was like stumbling taking his shirt off.
Well, it did look like he might have been having problems with his shoulder or something, right?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
But he also just seemed a little bit... He was slow to come up the stairs, and it's like, those guys aren't cutting weight, right?
No, well, maybe a little bit. Yeah, both of them were 265.
I think they both weighed in at 65, so yeah, they did cut weight.
But Hunt said he didn't have to cut weight for this because he dropped a lot of weight training. He looked a lot leaner.
Yeah, he looked really good.
Yeah.
He trained with Mike Swick over in AKA, who, by the way, I couldn't be happier for.
Yeah, me too.
Great dude. Good to see him succeed. Good stuff.
Yeah, Mike Swick's the best.
But Bigfoot went on this scope first, and he was slow in a few different ways. And then Mark Hunt was introduced, and he came out with this stuff already off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've said this before on one of your podcasts, but I feel like you can learn a lot about during the weigh-ins.
Yeah.
Weigh-ins are everything, brother.
Yeah.
It's everything. You really do see everything at the weigh-ins.
Deeply psychological. And I mentioned this, I don't think I mentioned this in this podcast, but maybe yesterday I said it. If you look at the weigh-in between Rousey and Holm, exactly what Ronda did at the weigh-in is what she did in the fight. The second she got off that scale, she ran over to Holm, who was standing her ground in her place, and rushed her. I mean, she really bum-rushed her. I think harder than Ronda's ever went for anybody. Even her last fight, when the lady said about her dad's suicide, you know, don't kill yourself or whatever, she seemed more mad at mm-hmm. Holly Holm for what? For drinking her drink and moving her hand towards her a little bit? Like, she bum-rushed her during the weigh-in, and she did exactly at that weigh-in exactly what she did in the octagon.
But didn't you say that the weigh-in changed the betting line?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it changed. The line moved after the weigh-in. Moved in Holly's favor.
Oh, see? Yeah. There's a lot of time.
The weigh-ins tell you everything. It's my second favorite day of a fight. It's the day that you get to see who's on weight. How do they stare down? Does either guy flinch? Does either one of them budge? Does somebody have trying to get the mental edge? It's the fucking greatest day of the week, except for Saturday.
To break it down even more, I've watched the last 4 weigh-ins of Johanna Jędrzejczyk, and this was the first time that Valerie Letourneau was the first person that also put her head down and matched up with Johanna.
Valerie did that at the on sale too.
Yeah, and it's basically saying, let's fucking go.
I'm telling you, dude, you're dead on fucking right on it. When we were in whatever, I fucking loved when they squared off. a lot of the time, my job is to make sure they don't touch each other. Because when they touch each other, then people start feeling disrespected and whatever. Valerie Ritterno laid her fucking head right on top of Joanna's at the on sale when we came out here for the on sale, and they smushed their fucking nose to nose. And I have to kind of gauge what's going on there so that shit doesn't happen. And I felt that they were both, and I was like, God damn, this is badass. I just let it happen because they both just did it, you know? But you got to be careful because you let guys do that and you get the Cormier-Jones situation, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's real tricky, but you're dead on with what you're saying.
Yeah.
And that was the day I said, Letourneau is here to fucking fight, man.
And not only that, but a little bit more icing on that cake. When Johanna and Letourneau were forehead to forehead, Johanna was talking and you asked her what she said, but if you watch that again, Valerie's talking too, and they're just talking over each other. They're both saying stuff.
Yeah.
She wasn't listening to Johanna, and Johanna wasn't listening to her.
How crazy is what Johanna said? I told her yesterday is your lucky day. Today and tomorrow are my lucky days.
Like, I know.
Some fucking creepy fairy tale, hobbit
awesome.
Type shit.
Yeah, she's the queen
she's
of the
a
sound
demon.
I'm too fast for them, and they are too slow for me.
She's a demon.
I gave
dude.
Her cookie.
Yeah, she's a demon. She's awesome. And I think that, like, having these two champions in the women's divisions, and both of them now are just these skilled killers, you know, both of them. I mean, look, Ronda was a skilled killer. Holly Holm's a skilled killer. John is a skilled killer. They're so skillful. It's like the highest level of MMA in the women's division is like, comparable to the highest level of men's MMA. I mean, absolutely. I put Joanna striking up with anybody on the fucking planet that fights in MMA. Six-time world Muay Thai champion, clean striking. I mean, she's obviously 115 pounds, so she's not dropping people dead like Rumble Johnson is, but she is fucking nasty and skillful.
Since the first time I saw her, I've said she's my favorite fighter, and I make jokes about wanting to marry her and this and that. Truth is, I have a girlfriend who hates all this Johanna mumble jumble when she reads it on my Twitter and is searching what people are saying about me. Who's this Johanna Jędrzejczyk? Would you really hook up with her? This and that. Truth is, you know, I make the jokes about Johanna because I say I need a woman that'll keep me in line. But she's really just my favorite fighter. I love UFC. I've been watching it since Gracie was in the gi. There's something about Johanna's striking.
Say her
the
name
fact
right.
That she throws.
Johanna.
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 Not Hanna.
Okay.
Johanna.
Johanna. I mean, I'm telling you.
Just call her Joanna.
But she's my favorite fighter. The way that she strikes, it's just fun to watch. If there was a guy that threw four or five punches at a time, all for the center of your nose, that guy would be my favorite fighter.
Yeah.
But she is.
And then you look at Holly Holm, obviously, which what Holly did last night was perfect. I mean, she fought a perfect fight. She didn't, I mean, there was nothing amateurish about it, nothing clumsy or sloppy. That was as skillful as you could ever hope for in a professional mixed martial arts fight. And the way she took advantage of Ronda at the end of that, the exchange in the second round when Ronda was tired and she slipped and she caught her with that punch and then head kicked her. I mean, it's perfect. It's perfect technique. Everything was perfect. So we have now in women's MMA, we have the two representatives now in the UFC. They're as skillful as anybody in MMA.
It's true. And then when you think about shaking out the rest of that 135-pound division, you pair up any way you want. Amanda, Kat, Misha, Juliana Pena.
Juliana Pena, it's nice to have her back too.
Those four.
Yeah.
Those four women, you know, in any mix and match that any way you want.
Well, you know, the perception was that Ronda was at the top of the heap and everybody else was just underskilled. But, man, that perception's been blown wide open by Holly Holm now. Now the whole game changes. Just opens it right. It's like the same thing that happened when Buster Douglas knocked out Tyson. And then Evander Holyfield came along and knocked out Buster Douglas. I mean, the whole thing just... It just throws the paradigm into a fucking turmoil.
It's true.
And you know the thing about having someone like a Ronda Rousey or like a Joanna is that greatness beckons greatness. When you have one person at the top that is just fantastic and spectacular and has these incredible results, all these people that are coming up, they have this insanely high level to aspire to. And that's what makes mixed martial arts so great in 2015. It's not a coincidence that if you go back to 1993 and you look at the level of the fighters and then you look at it in 2015, that it's just head and shoulders above everybody. It's barely the same sport. And the reason being is that slowly but surely, everybody aspired to the people who are at the top, and the people coming up got better and better and better and better, and that's how we have the level that we have today. And you're seeing that mirrored now in the women's divisions. And that's one of the most exciting things about the sport.
And it's that way not only for the UFC, but for life, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes I forget until, you know, I'll go once in a while a month or two without working with you, or, you know, but, like, there's only a few people left that I watch. I do stand-up comedy every night. I work really hard for the last 9 years, basically training every night to get as good as I can get. But when I see you, Joey Diaz, and Bill Burr, which are the only three people left that I'll even watch, it's a straight shot of adrenaline inspiration. All of a sudden, I'm writing harder the next day. I'm sleeping right. I'm doing more things. People, you know, it's important to use inspiration to your advantage for everything, you know?
Well, human beings, we all need other people to inspire us. We all do. It's one of the most, in one of the most important aspects of MMA is competition. And the competition in between these fights, I mean, these are not people that evolve in a vacuum. They evolve looking at each other, mirroring each other. And also now, one of the things that we've said many times is that martial arts have evolved more since 1993 when the UFC was founded than they have in the past 10,000 years. That's 100% true. But really, one of the reasons why it's true is because you can see the techniques. You can actually watch them. I remember when I was a kid in 1986, I went to watch the World Cup in Colorado Springs in Taekwondo, and I flew out there, and it was a giant turning point in my Taekwondo career because I was really good. I was winning like good level tournaments, and I was doing well. But in 86, when I went to watch the best guys on the planet, I came back 20, 30, 40% better. I was just way better. I saw the top of the mountain. And I think when you get people that are sitting in the crowd, you know, you get these young contenders that are sitting there and they watch someone like Holly Holm dismantle Ronda Rousey. They watch someone like Chris Weidman knock out Anderson Silva. They watch Jose Aldo or TJ Dillashaw. They watch these fighters and they go back to that gym and they're a different fucking person. They go back to that gym when they have the memory of that spectacular performance in their head, and it just makes them rise up. And I think also to people that don't have anything to do with fighting, they'll watch that Holly Holm fight and they'll wake up in the morning and they'll go to their fucking yoga class inspired. You know, they'll go take spin classes, they'll go run up hills, they'll show up at work fucking fired up, ready to kick some ass and get some shit done.
So true.
Yeah.
And the champions should take something from this, because what's one thing, in my opinion, that Anderson Silva's lost to Weidman, the first one, and this loss, Ronda Rousey to Holly Holm, have in common? And I say ego. Silva was showboating when he caught that punch. Maybe he would have lost anyway, but he was showboating. He caught it and it was over. And I'm sorry, but Ronda was fighting with pure ego yesterday. Her head, her chin was out. Her hands were low. She was just bum rushing. It seemed like she just thought she was gonna out. Sure,
I think it was more desperation than ego, but I think you're right in some ways. But I think really, instead of ego, I think pressure is a better thing to concentrate on, because I think both with Ronda and with Anderson, I mean, Anderson had the pressure of everybody saying he was the pound for pound greatest fighter of all time, and he had all these murderers coming up through the ranks like Weidman, Yoel Romero, all these Jacare, all these guys waiting in line to get a shot at him, and the pressure of that is just overwhelming. But unlike Anderson, or unlike Ronda rather, Anderson didn't have all these movie offers. He's not constantly doing television shows. And I mean, he had some media obligations, especially particularly in Brazil, where he's idolized, but Ronda's on a totally different level.
He didn't get enough credit for it. The guy was fucking 37, 38 years old, you know what I mean? People forgot. He was so good and so talented to still be doing what he was doing at the level he was doing it at 37 years old is unbelievable.
Are you guys going to do Vitor versus Anderson?
I don't know.
That's the fight.
I know. I don't disagree.
That's the fight. That's the fight. God. Is Vitor into that?
I think Vitor is, yes.
When does Anderson's suspension go up?
Might be the first of the year. I don't know exactly, but...
That's a fight.
Yeah.
That's the fight.
Do you think there'll ever be a time when marijuana is allowed in the UFC?
Well, marijuana, these guys can do whatever they want to do. You can't do it the week of the fight.
Right. Well, it's not even that Nowitzki said. It's like literally the day before the fight now. He's like, you just can't fight high.
Whatever it is that it's going to be out of your system, it needs to be out of your system by the fight. You can do whatever you want. There's so many misconceptions about how this thing goes down. Oh, John Jones can do cocaine, but John Jones tested positive for cocaine out of competition.
Right.
Out of competition. Nick Diaz tested positive 3 times in competition.
Well,
that's the difference.
The problem with the last time, though, was there was 2 WADA tests that had him below the threshold, which are much more comprehensive tests. They're blood tests. And the one Quest Labs test, which was a urine test, had him above it. So it's controversial what happened in the last fight.
Very.
That's
why he's going to do well in that deal.
Well, they're so out of control that they would fucking ban him for 5 years when they do that. I mean, it's one thing to find a guy or to figure out some sort of a compromise, community service, whatever the fuck you got to do, but you're taking away the guy's career. 5 years when you're 20 is a long time. 5 years when you're 32 is a death sentence.
It's a career ender. Yeah, I agree.
Well, they lost their lawsuit against Vanderlei. So Vanderlei, his suspension has been lifted, right? I mean, or if it hasn't been lifted, their lifetime ban of him has been thrown out by a judge.
That I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know.
I do know that. I know he definitely, I mean, I don't know whether or not the Nevada State Athletic Commission is going to appeal it, but I know that they did throw out his lifetime ban. They haven't licensed him.
Right.
I mean, it's not like he can go back to work right now, but if they just banned him or gave him a suspension that was the same amount of time that you would have gotten if you tested positive for steroids, especially Vanderlei, who had never tested positive before. You know, and look, Vanderlei's he's no saint. Who knows what the fuck he had done when he was in Pride? But the point is, when they were testing him, he followed the guidelines, at least as far as when they tested him. And they banned him for life. One time he runs away from a drug test, they ban him for life. That's fucking crazy. That's crazy.
Right.
I mean, I think someone needs to pull those guys aside and go, look, what you do is very important. It's very important to have you there. It's very important to have a voice of authority. It's very important to have penalties for people who violate the rules and cheat. But it's also very important to have some common decency and some compassion. And you can't take a legend like Vanderlei Silva, a fucking mixed martial arts legend, and ban him for life. I find that disgusting.
Right.
And it's bad for them because it makes them look bad.
I agree. I don't disagree with you.
It's not good for PR. It's not good for how everybody... I know they were mad at me because I tweeted the phone number for the Nevada State Athletic Commission after they banned Nick Diaz for 5 years. And I'm like, let everybody know. Like, let them know what you think about it. But, like, you have to understand what I did to you was nothing compared to what you did to Nick Diaz. Right. Nothing. Nothing.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I tweeted it. I was going to tweet it every day for like a year, but I changed my mind. I was like that, I'm not helping anybody. If they'll just change their number or whatever. But it's the point being is that they didn't take into consideration the 2 WADA tests, which is fucked up. And they banned him for 5 years and fined him $160,000. That's just crazy.
Yeah.
It's too much money.
Chavez Jr., they fined him $1 million, man.
Was it a million?
$1 million. 900,000, yeah.
For pot.
Yeah.
For God. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. See, maybe there should just be some matches where the fighter and their opponent have to smoke pot beforehand. Wouldn't that be fun? You know what I mean? All of a sudden, they're doing crazy stuff.
I know all you crazy weed-smoking dudes, man. love your weed, but don't smoke it 2 days before the fight, please.
Right? Or don't smoke it one day.
Let's just keep it simple. Let's play it safe. Let's go 2 days before the fight.
Well, the word on Nick Diaz was that the Gomi fight, that he tested so high that he had to be high when he was fighting Gomi.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's amazing.
I mean, you know, they say that smoking pot's one of those things where, like, if you're in college and you study for a test high, that you should take the test high. And, you know.
Really?
Yeah, and they, you know.
I've never heard that.
Oh, yeah, it's one of those, like, things. I mean, I cannot confirm before you guys start tweeting at me that I don't know my science, you know. I'm just saying that I've heard this before and that it sort of makes sense to me. So, I mean, I don't know, maybe if Nick trains high. I mean, I know sometimes I go on stage high. And
what?
Yeah.
What?
And well, I know. What I do is I work out a lot of my material. When I'm doing, like, a late-night spot at the Comedy Store, I purposefully get high. You know, it's like working out with ankle weights on. And then you do that stuff sober, you'll fucking slay a theater. Oh, my God, yeah. Your timing and beats are just impeccable. So I don't know, maybe he trains high so he feels like he has to fight high.
Well, there's been arguments like that when it comes to testosterone replacement and even, you know, some performance enhancers, that if the two fighters had made an agreement, you know, that they would both allow the other person to do, you know, whatever amount of whatever, that should be ethical and allowed. And then instead of saying, you know, oh, you're cheating, it's just like saying you allow someone to. I mean, we allow people to take multivitamins. We allow them to take creatine. We allow them to use, you know, cryotherapy chambers and all these things that have shown to have a pretty significant impact on recovery. Why not allow them, you know, to make an agreement?
I know I'd rather.
Like a steel cage match, right? You both sign up for it?
Yeah, I know I'd rather fight a stone guy than a sober guy.
You say that. You wouldn't want to. I'd rather do jiu-jitsu with a guy who's sober than a guy who's high.
Yeah.
When you get. I think I do jiu-jitsu better when I'm high. I really do. A lot of people do. A lot of jiu-jitsu people do jiu-jitsu high. They train high. They compete high. Super, super common. But the difference is it's not striking, you know?
I know I'm better at eating and watching movies when I'm high.
I wonder what's going to happen, Dana, you know, when you're talking about things like this, Dr. Welling, you know, coming out with this collagen stuff. Like, when they start coming out with gene therapy and all these different ways to make your body young again, and you get a guy like Vitor, who is an old guy with all this experience and all this knowledge, but, you know, that's the trade-off in life, is that as you get older, your body doesn't work as well. So you might be a crafty old veteran, but you got to conserve your energy more because your body's just not capable of the same kind of output. But if you get a guy like Vitor and then you bring him to that doctor and he does some wacky shit to his body and all of a sudden he's got both. He's got the knowledge and he's got the youthful body. The whole sport gets very, very different and very, very strange.
All of sports.
Yes.
And that'll change all of sports, not just fighting.
But the difference between basketball and MMA is that in basketball, you don't have a finish like you had last night with Holly Holm head kicking Ronda Rousey. You have someone slam dunking on you. That's like the, you know, that's the equivalent. You know, someone shooting a three-pointer in your face.
But like you said, you have a guy who's really talented, has the knowledge, and how much longer could Jordan have played if this would have been around when he was here?
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be interesting. It's definitely going to change the sports world.
Yeah, it is. And you got to wonder, you know, this stuff they're doing with stem cells, they're regrowing cartilage. People that have bone-on-bone arthritis, they inject them with stem cells, and it regrows cartilage. It regrows meniscus tissue. It's insane. So all these people that have these chronic ailments and injuries, they're going to be able to get those things fixed. And all the detrimental effects of constant competition, they're slowly but surely going to be able to chip away at that stuff.
It's true. And they're getting rid of arthritis. Arthritis, just the stuff that they're doing out there now, and those injections, arthritis goes away. You know, all the inflammation in your body that's going on. And it's going to be fascinating to see how this changes everything in the next 20 years.
Yeah, and it's going to be fascinating to see, like, what kind of regulations, if any, are they going to be able to establish to keep up with that stuff? Because
How would you even know if a guy was doing that?
Well, Nowitzki was telling me when he did my podcast that there's an issue that they're having now with, they have testosterone that they've developed through animals. Instead of, like, the way they make artificial testosterone or synthetic testosterone is they use wild yams. I don't understand the process, but they use yams. So when they use a carbon isotope test, they can tell that the testosterone that's in your body is not endogenous. It's not created by your own body. But with this animal shit, they can't tell. So the testosterone they're getting from, like, I don't know, wild boars or what the fuck they're using for the testosterone, it's the same as the testosterone that's being cooked up right now in little Tony's nuts.
That's nuts. And what's crazy is...
That's
nuts. He was telling me that there's this thing right now that, you know those strips that you put on your tongue, like mouthwash and, you know,
yeah.
talking about? That there's actually, they have these strips that they're putting on their tongue, and it gives you all the effects of, you know, like a growth hormone or
testosterone
injections or whatever it is, and it's out of your system in 12 hours.
Yeah, that's
so if you take that before you go on a workout and you do your whole workout and everything, you get all the benefits of it, and then it's out of your system in 12 hours.
That's incredible. I mean, that's incredible. They're calling that microdosing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's these guys are they're really playing Russian roulette with the testing because they're just hoping they don't get nabbed inside that 12-hour period.
Exactly. Well, that's why when the drug testers show up, they're showing up at your house at 6 in the morning, and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting times because it's been pretty clearly established that at least the early days of the UFC and the early days of Pride period, there was a lot of performance enhancing drug use. There was a lot of it, you know. Off the record, I've talked to guys who did it or in Pride who told me that everybody was doing it, and on the record, Ensign Inouye told me when he was on my podcast that they had in the fucking contract they gave him, it said we will not test for steroids in the contract. And we know it when we watched. You watch Vanderlei at 218 pounds, and you see all these fucking guys who are competing over there. We kind of knew they were juiced up. It's going to be interesting to see the culture of the sport transition to, you know, as clean as you can get it. And, you know, you guys have to be given credit for that because you stepped up and you did something that was very dangerous for the product. It's very, very, very dangerous for the reputation of the sport because as more of these people keep getting popped,
right.
like, and you're spending fucking billions of dollars to do this, and these guys are getting popped where you could just do what the NFL does, the NBA does,
right.
kind of turn a blind eye,
right.
and, you know, no one's begging you to do this or forcing you to do this.
You know, and I'm not sure if it's the NFL or Major League Baseball, one of them, they get warned that they're going to get tested.
Yes.
They know that the test is coming.
Well, that happens in college sports, too. I mean, I've talked to guys who played college ball, and they say, hey, Friday is going to be a test. And everybody's fucking drinking vinegar and, you know, in gallons of water and trying to clear their
system.
But
you're right when you say this. You know, when you look at what we're doing right now to clean the sport up, you know, we have contracts in place of how many fights we have to deliver, not just to television, but pay-per-view and, you know, all these things that we have. We have contracts. We have obligations. Yet we're going to spend $5 million a year in testing. And testing, it could completely cripple the entire business. But it's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I definitely don't think it's going to cripple the business. But I think it's definitely going to weed out.
If a guy gets tested,
yeah.
and it, you know, you get a big star,
mm-hmm.
and he's on something, he's gone.
Isn't that a big problem, too, with camps, is that it's not like the NFL where they have this, like, giant infrastructure set up for... They know, like, I mean, there's some variables when it comes to strength and conditioning training in many professional sports, but they have protocols that are pretty clearly established. Whereas in MMA, there's a bunch of different ways to do it, and there's guys that compete at a very high level that have really wacky camp environments where you're
sure.
like, you know, this is not really the most professional. They're hanging out with, like, that fucking guy that Anderson hangs around with, the guy from Black House, a 60-year-old guy who looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know what I mean? I mean, like, what do you think that guy does? Oh, nothing. Just fucking fruits and vegetables, steak and chicken. I mean, come on, man. The fucking guy's juiced to the tits. And no wonder, you know, Anderson tested positive. Oh, then no way. Is he hanging out with that guy? Well, why would that guy tell him the positive benefits of steroids? You know? It's weird. It's weird. You know, the sport is so big, but has that aspect of it still, that there's...
there's, you know, there's, it's not universal, not across the board. Like, look, the Kansas City Royals and the Los Angeles Dodgers, how much fucking difference is their training? How much difference is their preparation? I would say probably not nearly as much as comparing someone who trains at Nova Uniao or someone who trains at AMC Pancration, you know? I mean, the variables in MMA, they're pretty, pretty stark.
No, I agree. Yeah, that's true. And we're working now. The training has to evolve. You know, we're building this new campus. Basically, we're building new offices. And building a state-of-the-art rehabilitation center for fighters. And it's like the New England Patriots, right? If something happens to Brady, they don't tell Brady, see you later, come back, go do your surgery and all your stuff and come back and let us know when you're ready to play again. He's there. They're making sure he's doing therapy. He's got the best of it. That's what we're going to start doing it with the fighters in Vegas.
And how do you set something like that up? Like, who do you have run it?
So we're actually looking at companies right now to come in. You know, we're going to find the best of the best. This will literally be a state-of-the-art, the best in the world rehab facility. It's going to be insane.
No,
we're going to have everything. We're going to have everything in there to rehab. We're going to have the therapists and trainers in there to show people how to, you know, how to get. A lot of these guys will go get an ACL done and then not do the therapy when they come back. And you might as well not have the fucking surgery.
Yeah.
You have to go through the physical therapy to get it back. And then you have to keep working on that leg, you know? Yeah. And Conor McGregor, that's what's so another fascinating thing, his whole thing about movement, human movement and flexibility and stuff, he's very into that. He you know, he fought the Chad Mendez fight with a really blown out knee.
Now what did he do for, did he get stem cell shots while he was doing that?
So he went out to Germany and got those shots. And
Germany?
He went to Germany. Yeah, he's in Ireland, so
right.
He just went over to Germany and got those shots. And he did some in California, too. He did do some in L.A., too, when he was out in Vegas. And that's all he needed. He did that, and he did his own physical therapy, and he brought the knee right back.
Well, that's what's incredible about the stem cell shit, man. The regenerative potential for stem cells is just incredible. And they're just now starting to tap into that when it comes to sports and rehabilitation. When you're establishing this place, this whole center, are you gonna establish like strength and conditioning protocols too? Are you gonna bring people in for that kind of stuff as well? And like movement specific, like different guys who are strikers working on certain things, different guys who are grapplers working on certain things?
I don't think we're gonna get into the striking and grappling. That's not our area, that's not our thing. They can pick their own coaches and who they'll work with,
right,
on
but
that.
But I mean, as far as like improve, like strength and conditioning aspects of that.
Body balance, you know, mm-hmm. the proper strength, conditioning, stretch, you know, all the things that they're definitely not learning at their gyms.
Right. There's so much to learn. You know, I mean, there's a lot of coaches, like Edmund is a good example. He's obviously good at holding mitts and good at teaching Ronda the mechanics of throwing punches. How much does he know about defending guillotines? How much does he know about the transitions between boxing and grappling? And we don't, you know, we really don't know. And I think the same could be said as far as what are the requirements of your sport when it comes to strength and conditioning. It's still kind of being learned, and everybody does things differently. For every guy like GSP that thinks you have to use gymnastics, there's certain guys like Fedor gave up on all weights and any strength and conditioning later in his career and just did fight training, you know?
And then you look at John Jones right now, who's totally getting into all this powerlifting stuff. Have you seen some of that stuff?
Oh my God, he looks huge.
It's unbelievable.
He's shredded.
What a freak of nature that guy is.
Yeah.
He really is.
I'm hoping he straightens his head out and comes back, because we want to talk about just a spectacular talent. I mean, John Jones is probably the most talented guy we've ever seen in the sport.
Right.
I mean, he's just an incredible athlete.
and what he's been able to do to top level fighters like really early on in his career is nothing short of amazing. If he has a wake up call from all this and just cuts the bullshit and focuses on just taking advantage of the prime, because he's in his prime.
He's in his prime. He's so big, so talented, such a gifted athlete. I mean, you look at, like you said, what he's done in the sport. Then you look at what he's doing now. He just gets into powerlifting and he's benching 500 pounds and squatting, deadlifting 600 pounds. I mean, it's crazy.
And he could fight at fucking heavyweight too, by the way, easily.
He keeps powerlifting. He's probably going to have to.
I know, right?
Yeah, but it's cool. It looks like he's doing the right thing now. He's doing what he's supposed to be doing for his community service. Looks like he's working hard in the gym. You know, looks like his head's into it and he likes it.
And you know, we were talking about inspiration. Look, he's in camp now with the fucking woman's bantamweight champ of the world. Holly Holm is definitely going to give John some inspiration because I know they're close friends.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's fucking awesome. Listen, I think we gave these people enough. Let's end this bitch podcast on a plane. Oh, we look at this. We did another hour and 27 minutes. Shazam.
Holy
look
shit.
Look at that. 2 hours. Yeah. See, time flies when we talk, Dana White. Good Lord.
It's going to be the first podcast to win an Emmy.
You have to be on TV to win one of those, dude.
Like I said, changing the game.
All right. Well, this is the end of this. Thanks, brother. Appreciate it. Tony Hinchcliffe, say goodbye to the people.
Goodbye, people. Tony Hinchcliffe.
Tony Hinchcliffe.
1 hour special, one shot, coming soon. My first special.
Might be on Netflix. I mean, that's what I heard. Might be. Any more message to the fan? Any word? Nothing? Anything you want to say?
No, thanks. It was a historic night. You know, Ronda Rousey versus Holly Holm broke every record UFC ever had. And thank you, everybody. We appreciate it.
Attendance, pay-per-view buys, everything?
Attendance. The Eddie had gross record, you know, the gate record, the merch, the commercial pay-per-view. The pay-per-view's trending well over a million buys. What else? I'm trying to think. There were so many records that were broken that night. It was crazy.
Now, here's the last question. If you do a rematch, when do you think you would do it? Would you try to do it for UFC 200 in July?
I don't know. We got to see where Ronda's at, and we'll figure it out. Yeah, I mean, obviously,
that's like 8 months.
UFC 200 would be awesome.
That would be the move, right?
Be great.
All right, folks, that's it. That's the end. Thank you, and goodbye. Oh, are you still here? Well, if you are, please enjoy the lovely sounds of Dana White snoring on the flight home from Australia. Mm-hmm.